that everyone has a copy of the program. In case you don't, may you indicate so that it could be supplied to you. Question? On the 2N. Alright, please just keep your hands up so that it could be accepted. Right, I suppose that we have the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development as well as the National Prosecuting Authority and the Legal Aid Board. We're hoping to have the Department of Public Works from around 11 o'clock. So we're going to have this session from now until 11 o'clock. So whatever we're doing, saying, should be confined within that time frame. Secondly, we want to request that may we keep our cellular phones closed, not even on silent, closed. Because when they vibrate, or whatever else they do, they affect the recording of these proceedings. We do record just like they do in court. So if it does affect the process. So let us start by the usual round of introduction. The department and its entities, the Auditor General's Office. Do we have someone from National Treasury? Oh, yes, okay, fine. National Treasury and then Members of Parliament. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. The department and its entities, as indicated in the program, are here. From the department specifically, there's two officials with whom I'm here, Sandra Gom, the CFO, and and Erasmus from the CFO's office. I'm mentioning that I'm the DG of the
department. Yeah, can you do the round?
Thank you, sir. I'm here from the NPA.
Can you just
it seems. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
From the NPA, I'm Advocate Mshie, the Acting National Director. In accompanying me is the Acting CEO, Mrs. Beryls Melani, and the CFO, Mr. Brian Graham. That's NPA.
Thank you, Chair. From the Legal Aid Board side, I'm Justice Jim Labo, accompanied by the Chief Executive Officer next to me, Ms. Vidu Vedlanka. Next to her is the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Rebecca Shabatau. Next to her is Mr. Jerry Mapokwane, the Chief of Operations. And next to him is Mr. Brian Naya, the National Operations Executive. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good morning. My name is Simpiwe Ekele, Corporate Executive at the Auditor General.
My name is Mason Gao from the Auditor General.
Can you? I think the mic was not on, so we're not able to.
My name is Francis Baer from the Auditor General.
Trudy Botha, Auditor General.
Hi, I'm Werner Krause, National Treasury, Public Finance.
Can we have members introducing themselves? Masanda Pai and Pumakulu.
Then we said George Matigiza, Scopas, Henny Becker, Scopa.
Eddie Jane Scopa.
Lombola Shangwana, Scopa.
Roland Bufuke, Scopa.
Pierre John Kerber, Scopa.
Vincent Smith.
Trevor Bonham, Scopa.
Carol Johnson, representing the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development.
Gerard Kornel, Scopa.
Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Koti. I chair the committee. Right, having taken all the formalities, let's get to the business of the day. DG, once again, would like to heartily welcome you to Parliament and to our meeting. It's always a pleasure to have you around. We cannot restate the mandate of the department, which you know and which I think members are aware of. Which is obviously contained in the annual report that the members have gone through. You recall, DG, that we had a round of engagement at the beginning of the year on the annual report, but of course, some few weeks back we had another engagement, but it was on something else, but which still revolves around the reward and responsibility that you are dealing with. Well, I must indicate that the SCOPA we have resolved that all departments are going to appear before us, not for purposes of being prosecuted, but purely for purposes of our being able to do oversight. However, there are issues around which we would like to engage with the department to get clarity, and also so that we could also make some recommendations in terms of how some of the challenges could be resolved so that the department is able to fully fulfill its mandate as outlined. I will hand over to Honorable Trent, who has very limited time to deal with the report of the department per se. Honorable Trent.
Is that on? Yeah. Thank you, Chair. First of all, I'd like to also just say welcome the department for being here. You seem to be regular visitors to this committee, the reason being that things are not all that good in your department. However, you know, our purpose is to try and help you. And I think if we can just approach this line of questioning in that spirit, then I'll be very happy. Clearly, your staff, your human resources problem is your main issue in the department. Everything seems to revolve around that crisis. Chair, I'm going to rather put a general view on that, and then we can discuss that, and then if there's time, we'll get into more specific areas. But I just wanted to go through with you, just so we can understand where we're coming from. In the last 6 years, you've had four qualified reports. You started off with two qualified, 202, 203, then you went to emphasis of matter for 204, 205, now you've had two qualifications the last 2 years. In respect of the issues raised by the Auditor General, I just took out nine issues that he raised, and I just took a comparison of the last 3 years. In two of them, you've become worse. Two of them, you've just remained constant. And then there are four new issues that have arisen in this last report. So, you know, we are just going backwards. And then I want to just put this to you, because it's actually very important. If you look at what the Auditor General says about your human resource issues, First of all, you have a high vacancy rate of 22%, which is an increase over last year. So your vacancies have increased. Well, you know, you have the details, and specifically in the areas of highly skilled people, and that is really your prosecutors, etc., and then also in senior management. We then also have a situation where the Auditor General says, first of all, he says the following: the restructuring process is not yet finalized, and the framework keeps changing. He then says delegation of authorities are not finalized and change regularly. Then he goes on to say that your NTSF has not been reviewed since 2005, resulting that the annual budget is not fully utilized. And then he goes on to say that the performance agreements of the staff are not aligned to the NTSF. Then he goes on to say that interim approval has not been granted for your financial statements for the 202 financial year. And since then, no finality has been reached. Now, looking at that, and then when you go to two other documents, and that is the Public Service Commission tells us in its 206 year report on financial misconduct that your department actually has the highest number of cases of financial misconduct. 86, in fact, out of 319 cases. And then finally, when you look at your bonuses, your performance bonuses, I think you are giving us the answer immediately. Because in regard to performance rewards, in 2005 you gave out about 15,000, 2006 14, and this last year you only gave 2,385 people performance bonuses. Now that's good, because you're not paying people for non-performance. But I mean, to me, it's a picture. And then finally, Chair, before, and then I'd like to give the department the opportunity to tell Scopa what are they doing to fix this human resource problem, because it's, to me, critical. If you go to the resolutions of Scopa, flowing from our meeting with you earlier on in the year, you will find that that matter is raised in two resolutions of Scopa, the human resource issue, and we've had no feedback from you. So, Chair, if we can just deal with that, and then there are some specific questions that I'd like to ask if we have time. Thank you.
If we have time, I've underlined that. Yes, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Honourable Member Trent. I think I like the approach, which is the one that seems to give a broad overview based on the AG's report. I think the various components of the department will be more specific in there. But on my part, just on the general overview, I'm not sure that one can conclude pretty easily that one is certainly going backwards. I mean, I noticed the Honourable Trent there raising issues of conclusion, but I think it's not something that I want to spend too much time on, but I'm hoping that at the end of this we'll be able to get a clearer picture. On the issue of the number of factors that impact on personnel, in the department specifically, we do have a high vacancy rate of 23%, which will be reduced significantly. By end of the year, it will be reduced significantly because we are in the process, I think you would have seen as well, over the past 2 months in the newspapers, we have been advertising posts. But one of the reasons why it is like that is that we create posts as well on an ongoing basis. So as we determine the need and we identify areas where we need to create posts, we create those posts, and so we include them. So it will always be fluctuating based on those changes. So there's the increase of creation of new posts that creates that, which happens on a regular basis. But then there's also the issue of staff leaving for obviously various reasons, and the time it takes for us to recruit does have an impact on that. So from that perspective, you will see why the 23% rate would be there. We're trying to reduce it, and I think it is high, and it can be a lot less. One of the reasons that we had raised last time, which is still a valid reason, but we will be again dealing with it before the end of this financial year. We'd have liked to have dealt with it before the end of December, but we're not going to be able to do it. But I think we'd have addressed it before the end of the financial year, relates to the job evaluations. We have been engaging with DPSA on how we should deal with job evaluations, and there have been different, again, interpretations of how the public service regulation provides departments should do to deal with job evaluations. We have taken an interpretation, obviously, that every job that's created has to be job evaluated. And I think in some respects we interpreted that provision quite restrictively to the extent that it did not enable us to move as fast as we would have liked. We've since obtained some clarity from the DPSA, and I think as of yesterday we're able to identify posts that we don't have to evaluate, that we're thinking we have to evaluate. We're able to get some consensus with DPSA that we don't have to evaluate them again because we can use a comparison of already existing posts that are evaluated. So you see, therefore, that next week we'll advertise quite a large number of posts that we can advertise now that are vacant, that were not advertised because we thought we had to go through a job evaluation exercise. So that has helped a lot. I think there's about 1,200 of those posts that we thought we had to evaluate. We eventually reduced them to the point that we believe we have to evaluate less than 100. So there's well over at least 1,000 posts that we can advertise immediately, both in the media and also within the public service. The current vacancy rate is 12%. At the time of the audit, obviously, it was 23%. It's now 12%. And at the end of August, we had advertised just over 1,000 posts. Most of those are in the process of being filled now. So we're conducting interviews and so forth.
So did you, when you say the vacancy rate is 12%, you actually mean that the other 11% you have already advertised in their application? Or you mean that they have been advertised, people interviewed, and they are already working?
It's a combination, Jefferson, in that they have been advertised. In some cases, people have already been appointed.
Let's keep it this way. I think the fact of the matter is you are attending to your human resource deficiencies in a structured and consistent manner. I think let's call it that. Unless you want to move to another issue, but I think this one of human resources, unless the Honorable Trent would like to make a follow-up, but I think it has been sufficiently responded to.
I just have a follow-up on the vacancies, because I think that, so you're saying to FDG that at this time your vacancies are 12%?
Yes.
Okay, and then you have a whole lot of other posts that are in the pipeline being advertised. I think you said 1,000,
yes,
something,
yes,
like that. Which then means if you look at the calculations that you should be getting pretty close to zero vacancies by the end of the year. Is that what you're telling us?
I wouldn't want to say by the end of the year. I'd want to play it safe and say by the end of the financial year.
So in other words, when we have the next audit, vacancies won't be a problem anymore.
No, I can't say it won't be a problem, but I think it will be a lot less than the 23% that you can.
Okay, now, I mean, we've taken a global issue. The two areas that we're really looking at, which the AG has highlighted, is your highly skilled production levels, that's 6 to 8, which I assume is prosecutors, etc. And then your management level, 13 to 16 permanent folks. I mean, are you going to get improvements in those two levels? Because it appears that that's where the problem lies, in those two.
It includes those levels.
Yeah, but I mean, proportionately, are you going to be able to fill as many of those levels as the general average?
Definitely.
Okay, well, that's good. Then, you know, what I wanted to just finally just on the staff matters is the AG and I did give you a general when I started, I gave you some general questions which we can be a little bit more specific on, and that is in the terms of your restructuring process that was not yet finalized and the framework keeps changing, and then that seems to be a sort of an organogram problem. Can you give us an answer on that one?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to give you too much comfort because the framework will have to keep changing. I think one of the things we have to grapple with, as I indicated in the last presentation before the committee, and we have to bear with this one, is what should be the business of this department? What should be the core business of this department? So as we are working on the changes to the organogram, we're trying to structure the department along what we believe ought to be the department's business. So those areas that we do not believe ought to be the department's business, we're trying to structure them either out of the department, away from the department, or in a way that really indicates what should be core and what shouldn't be core. If you can't do that now and move them out of the department, but at least we're beginning to start to create a framework in terms of which discussion must begin to happen about how to appropriately deal with issues. So as we work on this thing, then with the consultants, and we pick up these things, we do identify them and we try and impact by putting the changes. The overall framework, though, in terms of the project, in terms of finalizing the project, that's not changing. The time frames remain the same. So in other words, this is not something that keeps getting extended. The original time frames will remain in terms of completion of the project. But within those time frames, when we do pick up things that don't make sense, we definitely are not going to leave them. So we will restructure in that way. And what it also enables us to do is to realign the work of the officials. There are areas where, and I'll give a typical example, where we split activities into three and created three posts, different posts. But when you look at the work that those three people do, it can actually be the work that one person can do. And we're trying to realign that as well. You know, for example, in the area of HR, we have different directorates that do different areas, different things. But if you look at the work that they do, you know, and you look at it very closely, it is activities that can be done by one person, but you split the activities into different components and brought different people to do it. So we are realigning that as well. So it will happen. Same thing with the area of maintenance. You know, we have maintenance officers, maintenance investigators, and maintenance clerks. But if you look at it strictly in different environments, that work done by those different people can be done by one person. So we are doing things in that way. So that occasions the change in the framework as it discovers us.
Okay. So it does require, therefore, that decision, because the original decision to split subsequently found to have not been well thought out.
Yeah.
And then, so to avoid this backwards and forwards, because after 3 years, you may find another split, and after a year and a half, another combination. So you have that sense of continuous fluidity, which, okay. Honorable Chance?
Yes, sir. I hear what the DG is saying, but you know, just to emphasize what you're saying, we actually get to a point when you can decide what is it that you do. I wouldn't have thought it's all that difficult to understand what the Department of Justice has to do, the constitutional development. I think it's pretty sort of obvious. Just put the criminals behind bars. I know you have a dispute on with Treasury in respect of the third-party funds, and one of my colleagues will deal with that. So I'm not going to enter that debate, but I mean, you know, that is something that you also need to resolve. But we can't go on and on and on with this. You can't go fighting Treasury all day long about what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing.
Move to another point.
Sure, but then we come to, you see, this is the problem, because the Auditor General says that because you don't have these particular systems in place or the posts in place that you need, and the performance agreements are therefore not aligned, therefore your performance agreements are not aligned to your medium-term strategic focus. And that can impact on the spending of your budget and your budgeting. You know, I don't understand why this is taking so long.
Can you respond to that,
No, I think it's the issue of performance. I'll treat it differently. I won't link it to necessarily budgeting and the activities that we do. I think we're trying to get the maximum out of officials, and we're saying that the performance agreements can be tighter to truly reflect what we do. So it's more really a performance management. I don't think it affects our budgeting. It may have an impact in some areas on performance specifically, but not necessarily on budgeting. So
okay.
That's work in progress.
All right.
Right, or maybe the Auditor General would like to comment sometime. He specifically said that it leads to your budget not being fully utilized. That is what he told us. And then another human resource issue is the delegations of authority are not finalized and changed regularly. I would have thought that also would impact on your performance quite dramatically.
I think that's the revision of the other allegations in place, and I think we're revising them to try and improve. The revised version is the one that's not finalized. Well, in fact, it has been finalized, but we just want to make sure that it's properly distributed. We have finalized it now. It wasn't finalized at the time.
Okay.
Now, let us go to some of the specific issues, Chair, if I can, and I think, unless the members would like to ask...
Well, no, you don't have much time.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through them very quickly, and I'm not going to actually tell you exactly what the AG said, because that's going to waste a lot of time. But these are the issues that have been raised, and they are issues that are getting worse, and I want to now get the detail of what I said generally. Ineffective asset management. You started off and you had the emphasis of matter in 205, you now have the qualification on that issue. So you're getting worse.
Okay.
Now, what are you going to do about that? Or what have you done about it? And what comfort can you give us?
I think I'll let Ms. Gorm just give the specific details because they are running with the project.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in terms of the two issues that the Honourable Member has mentioned that got worse, one is obviously the third-party funds, which we'll deal with separately, and the other one is the asset management. Now, we brought along our audit action plans, which we discussed at the audit committee on a quarterly basis, and we've got copies here that we can distribute. But what are we doing about it? Let me just turn to that page quickly. I think it's a combination. The problem that we have is a combination of issues that we need to address. So we started with training. Although training was ongoing, we actually initiated training with National Treasury and SAMDI, in specific for our asset controllers. We've appointed asset managers in the regions or asset controllers, specific responsibilities assigned to those individuals. We're in the process of obtaining scanners to enable the stock site process, in other words, to do it quicker and to do it more accurately. And then from a national office perspective, because we've got decentralized financial administration in the department, obviously the CFO's responsibility is then to increase the monitoring and follow-up on that. So in terms of our financial instructions, we're supposed to do a quarterly asset verification process. That has been done for the first, already two quarters is passed. We've done it. CFO office is now going around the country to do spot checks in terms of compliance to our own financial instructions. So if everything goes according to our action plan, Chair, we should not have this finding going forward to the end of the financial year, because we're doing everything in our power to address the shortcomings that were identified.
Thank you very much. I hope the comrades from the portfolio committee are taking note of that, so that the portfolio committee can run with it in terms of checking implementation. The plan is there, it's fine, it's good, but if it's not implemented, if you don't have sufficient people to monitor and ensure enforcement, it might be there on paper, but not being complied with. Honourable Chairman.
Chief, I'm just going to deal with the other issue which is being repeated, and then I'd like to get on to the new issues, because there are four new issues, and this concerns me greatly. The one is repeated is the reporting on performance information. And I just want to read to you the scope of resolution.
No, let's do this. I was looking at your time. Your time has actually elapsed. But like in soccer, give you some bit of extra time, injury time, but then use it more effectively.
Yes, well, then I'll have to try and summarize. But we were told by the accounting officer that there was some new indicator metric system had been developed, and this was going to address the problem of performance reporting, and yet the Auditor General doesn't, he raises the matter again. In the interest of time, Chair, can I just put the other four questions, because they're to the point, okay? That's the one which is a repeat. The four new ones, and that is, control weaknesses in the computer environment. Now that concerns us, because people are relying more and more on computers, and we know that computers can be manipulated and used if you don't have a proper control environment. So Now, this is a new problem that's crept into the department, and maybe you can just tell us why and what you're doing about it. The second one is non-compliance with the public service regulator. And I think that's got to do with what's going to be disclosed by members of the staff, etc., etc. That's a new one. That's crept in now. Then we had this significant number of audit adjustments that had to be made this year. You know, it was almost if you were given a second chance. You might have had a worse report if you'd not had the opportunity to make some adjustments. I think you've got to say thank you to the Auditor General for that leniency. And then suspense accounts. This is something I haven't seen now for years. You know, suspense accounts was something we used to get 10 years ago that the people didn't know what to do with the expenditure, so they just dumped it in the suspense account. Now suddenly this thing pops up under other matters, and that concerns me. Because it gives the idea that generally your accounting and your compliance is deteriorating. And that's what I said initially. That's the impression we get from the results of this audit. But maybe you could just deal with them specifically, each one of them, and tell us A, why, and B, what are you doing about it?
Okay. Before we end on some of the issues. No, I don't think it's actually getting worse. I think it's just a reflection on the activities that are taking place. I think control on computers. I think because of our modernization, I think too many people are beginning to have access into the system. So we need to constantly be revising our policies, especially an IT policy. We need to put and we're in the process, hopefully we'll do it before the end of this calendar year, a comprehensive IT policy in place that regulates the use of computers. There are measures that we're putting in place, but we just want to make sure that they suit everybody. Some that we put in place didn't suit everybody, so we're revising. So we'll have an IT policy before the end of the calendar year. A draft is in place. We'll have a final one before the end of the year. With respect to public service regulations, I think that one is just some officials that haven't completed their bit. You know, it's financial declarations. Yeah, they were done, but they were not done timely. Financial declarations and submission to the Public Service Commission. So we haven't done that. It's been done now, and we are dealing with the officials that took time on that particular issue.
So you are going to take some sort of disciplinary action?
It's already underway.
Because if you don't discipline people for non-compliance, they just continue to do it.
Okay.
Can we round up? Yes. Chair, okay, thank you. In terms of the material corrections to the financial statements, I think if we just quickly run through them, those adjustments were made mostly as a result of the changes that we have in terms of the accounting framework. In other words, if I look at it, let's say claims against the state, previously we agreed with the Auditor General about 3 years ago that we would only put it as a footnote in the financial statements. This year, the auditors insisted to have a value linked to it in the note to the financial statements. So that was an audit adjustment. We did have the amount available. There was disclosure. It was just not in the note as was agreed 3 years ago with the AG. In terms of accruals and commitments, of the accruals of 11 million, those accruals were incorrectly disclosed as commitments. So it was in the financials. It was incorrectly disclosed. And we corrected that. I think, again, it's a regular audit adjustment. In terms of assets less than 5,000, as well as the last bullet, finance leased assets, those matters were not provided for in the specimen financial statements or the guidelines issued by National Treasury. Those were provided for in frequently asked questions that were published on the National Treasury website. And after the auditors raised it, we obviously included it. But I'm saying to you, it wasn't there in the template. It wasn't there in the policy. It's not there in the guidelines. We agreed to include it because of insistence from the Auditor General. Otherwise, they might have qualified us on that. In terms of the last one, which deals with the suspense account, the IJS expenditure, I think it's practice that in all the IJS departments that when we receive the money gets received in a suspense account and we do payments from a suspense account. I think if you look at the rest of the audit report, there's no mention of suspense accounts. So suspense account is completely under control. The problem that the AG had with this is that we did not disclose these expenditure or transactions in our financial statements because it went through a suspense account. In other words, it wasn't accounted for in our statement of financial performance. I hope that answers it, Mr.
Yeah, and do you clear the suspense accounts on a monthly basis?
Chair, yes, we do. We do recons on a monthly basis, and we have all of that available. Confirmation with third parties in terms of agency services, all of that is under control.
All right.
I'm finished now. I just wanted to say, can we now expect to get a clean audit at 208?
Yeah, no.
With a few matters, right? But that's okay. No qualification.
No, you see, that will be a speculative attempt to drop call. They'll tell us anything. Let's wait for the... Glenn, want to say something?
Yes, Chair. Thanks, Chair. Just briefly to confirm that in this year's audit report, we did not report on the suspense account. It was reported 2 years ago, 2004-05.
Okay. Thank you very much, Commissioner Sangwan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be dealing with the third party funds. The Auditor General has indicated that the internal control on the financial statement is inadequate and accounting records have not been maintained since 1994. There are six concerns that have been raised if you have looked through the Auditor General's report. Can we be informed what has been done to rectify these concerns and ensure that there will not be any continuing of these? Thanks.
I think there are a number of issues that we're looking at. I mean, let's start with funds, Honourable Member, someone relate to monies that are paid into the department on behalf of others, as we noted. Some of the interventions that we're putting in place, as you know, there's a PPP project that is being implemented with Treasury. We're hoping to finish that by June next year. We're still in the process of finalizing the bidders. We've reduced them to two. So the process of identifying one from those, I think, between now and June next year should be finalized, and then we should start implementing immediately thereafter. But in addition to that, you know, we have been putting in place our own systems, which is the Justice Deposit Account system, where we've rolled it out to different courts and to different master's offices. So in those courts where we've rolled it out, we're functioning electronically. We're not using the manual system. So that helps with the control.
Can you be strategic? Can you be closer to,
I beg your pardon,
to the mic, yeah?
We've rolled out the Justice Deposit Account system to quite a number of courts. Our intention is to roll it out in all of the master's offices and to roll it out in all of the courts. I think we've just gone over 200 courts now where we've rolled it out. We're possibly about halfway, 329, which is 57%. There's 252 courts left where we need to roll it out in master's offices. So that improves on the controls. It doesn't absolutely prevent inappropriate behavior, but what it does is enables you to track and be able to see where the inappropriate behavior would have taken place. So we can improve our controls using that system. So those are the two systems that we're using and are putting in place to try and put some control over this particular issue.
But
I was going to follow up, but Chair, because of the time.
Do follow up.
No, the follow-up that I wanted to make is, what exactly are you saying that this type of challenges that we are having, I mean, we are talking about six issues that need to be attended to. Are we saying that when we go to the next annual report, there will be three or there will be none at all?
Definitely I can't say none, because I know for a fact that it won't be like that. I think as I indicated last time, this is going to be another two-year problem, I think. Only 3 years from now, maybe 2009, 2010 would be when we should expect something better because of the volumes and the backlog with which we're dealing. But I think the issues should be getting better and they should be reducing. They should not be getting worse. So you should be beginning to get a clearer picture. Definitely, you should get an improvement in the control measures that are being put in place. You should be able to see that. You should be clearly getting an improvement in the reconciliation you know, especially of the courts where we've rolled out the system, that should be improved. But in terms of fully getting the books to balance, we may not be able to actually get that done because we have to go back many, many, many years. In fact, what we may be bringing back to the committee is to write off certain amounts from a certain period on. That's what we'll be doing to finally resolve the problem.
But have we been able to get over the policy issues? I know that that's another issue that I would want to refer to the portfolio committee. If there are still issues, but if there are not, then have we gotten over this policy
issue? No, we haven't gotten over the policy issue. I think it's still to come formally before the committee. We've raised it at the portfolio committee. It hasn't been finally dealt with.
To what extent are these contributing to, you know, the issues that he has raised? The fact that the third party funds are like the poor cousin of the program that you're running.
I think, really, to be honest, it's a problem that irrespective of which department would be settled with, it would have to face. It's purely something that has to be dealt with by either department that has the problem. We just want to make sure that when the policy issues are resolved, at least we don't hand over a problem, we hand over an issue. But
if at all you're going to hand over to somebody, it might as well be that the resolution is that you remain settled with it.
Yes.
To preempt the process, that it will end up being handed over to somebody.
No, indeed, we are concerned.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next question is, we would like to want to get an explanation on how documents on liability and bank balance related to third party funds not accounted for. That has been given by the Auditor General. If you could explain to us why is it that that has not been done.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the last time when we were in SCOPA or before SCOPA, specifically in relation to the department's audit report, we did raise the matter that we have not received guidance from National Treasury in terms of the disclosure of the third-party funds. We at that stage obtained a legal opinion that confirmed that we can actually regard it as a separate reporting entity. Subsequent to that hearing,
how many legal opinions did you get? Did you go for one, or you shoved around like?
Okay. The first legal opinion was obtained as part of the PPP process via the transaction advisor, which was Ernst & Young. That was the Hoffman opinion that some might be familiar with. That was then sent to the Chief State Law Advisor, Mr. Inver Daniels, in the department, who then provided us with a final opinion. So there's just these two opinions. Subsequent to that, the Auditor General had a specific question on that, which we then also forwarded to the Chief State Law Advisor for opinion. So there's really just two opinions. Subsequent to the previous SCOPA hearing then, the Treasury on the 15th of August provided guidance to say third-party funds should be accounted for in the votes account financial statements, which we obviously disagree with. And bearing in mind, we had to submit financials by the end of May. So by the end of May, we did not have that guidance, and we said based on the legal opinion that it should be regarded as a separate reporting entity, we submitted a separate set of financial statements for the money, for the third-party funds.
But what is current policy? I mean, before the legal opinion, what is it that was regulating the status of the third-party fund within the department?
Chair, that is exactly why we obtained the legal opinion, because the Auditor General in their reports reported that there is no legal framework. So the legal opinion then clarified or concluded to say, based on everything that they considered, there is a basis for a separate reporting entity. Now, the National Treasury...
But was it really because of the AD's opinion, or primarily because the department wanted a policy change in relation to the status of the fund?
I think, well, the important thing is that a policy has to be made about whose money it is, and therefore how to account for it. We take a view of the department, it's not our money. It's money that belongs to other parties. They relate to private disputes. So they shouldn't be reflected as part of the vote account that comes from...
Yeah, no, I hear that point, and I think that point is very clear. All I'm saying is that while management has that view, but what is policy, or what was the status quo in relation to how the funds are managed within the department? Because for me, that is what should, while in the process of seeking legal opinion and developing this or that policy, what was current should actually be guiding how you relate to this fund, whilst you are failing to sort out whatever other things that may arise. So it might as well be that the extent to which these entities use in the department has a very strong impact in terms of the extent to which the department is able to exert effort and energy to ensure that it affairs are run appropriately.
The approach is that we have to deal with it because it's money that comes via the department, it's money that's received by the department, we have to deal with it, we can't leave it unattended, okay. So we're dealing with it.
Okay, sorry. All right. Well, that's fine. You're
good. I actually should have, Chairperson, included the issue of the asset management that is ineffective. Maybe you can explain to us what is it that has been done about that. It's not even updated.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can maybe refer the members to slide number 8 in the handout, the audit action plan for the department, page 8. In terms of the steps that we're taking, I think something that I left out earlier when I talked on asset management, we're obviously considering disciplinary measures against the individuals that did not comply. We are providing training to our asset controllers. We're looking at appointing asset managers per region in the region. We in the process of obtaining scanners to enable the stock take process. And then from a CFO perspective, overall monitoring, going to the regions, revisiting the stock take process, the asset verification process on a quarterly basis, and then obviously taking corrective measures where that is necessary.
So all these are essentially the planning phase.
In implementation phase two, we already visited one region and the other dates are provided there in the audit action plan.
I'm looking at page 8, progress to date, recommendations made to DG. DG yet to approve all out of, I don't know how that word is pronounced, Riahabuswa. Financial management structure. And if you go down, bids invited shortlist 15 October 2007. Testing scanner 6 November 2007. Award tender by 9 November. If you go to the next page, partial information, letters relevant heads requiring corrective action by 31st October. Which means that's yesterday. That's today. So that's why I'm saying it's more at the planning stage than by and large. It might as well be that one or two areas are already in motion, but to a large extent, you have completed the conceptual framework. Yeah, this is what it is. Now we must move to you. That's what I was saying.
You're right.
Oh, okay.
The last question, Chairperson. As a department, you could not produce accurate financial statements regarding the third-party funds. It is indicated that this was due to inadequate internal control and lack of financial reporting system. So what has been done to correct this?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, that finding, unfortunately, is real. I think the DG mentioned earlier that we're busy rolling out the JADA system, which is a computerized system to deal with these third-party funds, which is over 50%, I think 59% at this stage. So we largely rely on manual information when we have to compile these annual financial statements.
Can I check that the JADA system? You have about 580-something offices, isn't it? In how many offices has it been rolled out to date?
329 sites, Chair. 29. It's on page 4 of the second handout, which is the third party funds audit action plan, right on top. Can I continue, Chair?
Just a minute. On the same wavelength as your page 4.
Page 4.
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. So what I'm saying is that we're really relying on manual information from all the courts out there to be able to produce a set of financial statements. So in addition to rolling out the system, from a CFO perspective also, we've introduced or we're busy developing a tool in terms of getting monthly information that will end up in the financial statements from all courts. We're obviously going to insist on managers signing off and certifying information, which to a large extent I think will address the incomplete and the inaccurate information that we've received from the offices in the previous year. I think key to this also, we made a decision that because we knew that we're going to get a disclaimer on the third party funds, because we knew that we didn't have the system to enable the production of that. I think we took a conscious decision that we have to submit the set of financial statements by the end of May to enable the Auditor General to express an opinion. But same time in the interim, we need to implement measures so that we can at least produce an accurate set of statements for the next financial year, which is exactly what we're doing, Chair.
You're done, Comrade. I see that the AG says there are two versions of the GEDAS system. That's the case. See, version 3 and version 4. Is it a substantive thing, these versions, or...?
No, it's not. It's not an improvement. If you find a functionality that manually we need to provide for electronically, we just continue development. So it's just a reflection of the latest development and addition to the system.
And I see that in this handout, we are now in GEDAS 5.
Yeah, that will be the PPP, yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. Yes, comment.
I'm sorry. I wanted to lastly, on the issue of a task team being established to investigate the legal status of the third party funds, has it been concluded, or how long is it going to take? Has it been established?
No, I think there has been guidelines issued by National Treasury. Maybe Treasury could talk to that. But let me start with the AG's office. But without necessarily saying if they feel strongly, I'll allow them to respond to that question. All I was saying was that you have to be aware that as far as the department is concerned, it certainly would prefer a particular outcome. And I suppose the struggle will continue until, I don't know until when, but I'm just saying there is that challenge which I think the portfolio committee will hopefully be received together with the department on. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Well, my question, just from the audit point of view, is actually linked to the question that the honourable member asked. That we take the point that the guidance from the National Treasury around how that party funds needs to be accounted for in the books of the Department of Justice that came late in the audit process, and it is a matter that we always engage with in the audit process. I just want to get a sense from the audit point of view. Now that the Accountant General has given guidance, is what is the intention of the department in terms of accounting for it? For example, specifically the bank balance and the liabilities that were excluded previously. Is the intention going forward that we're going to account for it in the way that the Accountant General prescribed?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we are putting all measures in place to be able to have accurate information by financial year end. Whether we put it in a separate set of financial statements or whether we put it into the vote account financial statements, we will have proper information hopefully available if our plans, if everything goes according to our plan. Now, in terms of finalization of the legal framework, that is a very important part of this whole process for third-party funds. And again, it comes back to the policy issues. What is the real nature and essence of these transactions under third-party funds? Is it really a department's core function? Is it maybe an agency function which the National Treasury actually referred to in their directive? And I think that's key things that need to be resolved in terms of finalizing a legal framework that will inform the accounting framework. So I'm saying it's really work in progress. I'm heading up that team in terms of resolving it. My target date for that is the end of the financial year. By end of March, we should have this all finalized, clarified, so that we submit the appropriate set of financial statements to the Auditor General. Obviously, part of that process is further negotiations and discussions with the AG as well as the National Treasury.
Okay. I think what was important for me was your initial line. Whatever the status, the most important thing is to be able to build capacity to be able to give financial statements or records that are complete, that are accurate, and that should actually reflect a better management of the resources that come into. Is there something you can add from National Treasury on this matter?
I agree. Now, we are in a process of negotiation, so I think definitely the matter will be sorted by end of this year.
Okay. All right. As long as you put it out appropriately.
Is this an issue which concerns me? This problem has been with us for about 13 years now. And I know that this fund was the subject of a forensic audit a few years back, correct? Has there been any progress in terms of getting prosecutions regarding people? Because I just want to see a list of people who have been identified or who are being investigated. Because we're dealing with huge amounts of money now within this fund. And do we have any idea how much could have been stolen or siphoned off? And as you said, this is other people's money.
All right. Okay. Then respond to the question. Actually, I was going to make a follow-up in that, more or less in that direction, that there are offices that did not submit financial statements. There are offices where certain very basic documentation like receipt books could not be submitted, or case files or bank statements were not submitted. What is it that is being done in relation to this situation where it would appear that there's just no, like there's nothing happening, and yet there's a lot happening?
I think as our forensic unit finishes their investigations and identify non-compliance with DFI, we do start disciplinary processes. There's more to be started, others are already underway. But I should be signing off on letters before the end of this week to the relevant officials to advise them of the action.
DJ, maybe on the last issues I raised, where, because in terms of what the AG office submitted to us, you, 88 offices did not submit their financial information. 9 submitted incomplete financial information to you, to head office for consolidation. I'm saying in those instances where incomplete information will include lack of receipt books, no financial statements, which means you're not able to know what went in, what came out. I mean, what is it that is going to happen? Have you thought it out? I don't want an off-the-cuff kind of response, but I'm just saying, it reflects a very, very unhealthy situation on the ground.
I mean, it's part of the overall plan. Remember that the system is manual. That's why something like that happens. So the JDAS and the PPP, which moves the system to an electronic framework, is part of the process of solving. But in addition to that, notwithstanding those changes, the individuals whose responsibilities are to sign off on things, to make entries, where they haven't done so, those disciplinary steps that you have proposed to take.
All right. Thank you very much. I do hope that especially the issues around human resource will be successfully attended to, I think, as you've indicated. Because you note that even your audit committee report indicates too problems around internal controls. In fact, they use the word breakdown, internal controls. And I would imagine that these relate to challenges of human resource, having the necessary people to, you know, to monitor and actually to enforce some of the challenges that might arise out of human resource deficiencies. Could be what the AG has noted, the lack of a positive and supportive environment for proper internal control and also conscientious work or management. So I think if you don't have all these things in place, you may have the documentation, the plan, but if you don't have the people to monitor and enforce, I think it might remain that way. So I do want to stress that going forward, it will be very, very important to ensure that the challenges around human resource, and especially around monitoring and enforcement, is critical. I do know when I'm at home and I visit the magistrate's office, I see slacks in all these recent books. Now, when I come here and it's like people cannot submit receipt books. It can only be that the receipt book will serve as proof that transaction took place, and they must therefore account for those transactions. So clearly, where receipt books are not available, tax payments are not available, that should raise the suspicion, and think that these are matters that do definitely need to be attended to. So you have that challenge, that responsibility. Right. Thank you very much. Comrade Vincent, over to you. The National Prosecuting Authority. Yes. I go with the comrade.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to first on all focus on the criminal assets recovery account, and then we'll go into the NPA later. Just to remind the House that this account is a product of the, or a consequence of the prevention of organized crime. We seize assets or cash from criminals. And what is important is that this money must be deposited into the account to disrupt criminals. So that is the important thing. My first question, therefore, is do we have a list of all the assets that we've captured?
May I say this, that as you may well know, that the NPA was hit by a tsunami recently. I have with me here the CFO who will respond to the majority of the questions, but I may come in where it is necessary. May I hand over to the CFO who will be able to respond adequately. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The answer to the question made by the Honourable Member is that the criminal asset recovery count does not deal in assets. It deals in cash. It is really the management of a bank account, the criminal asset recovery bank account. But the question of assets comes into being because assets are...
Sorry, sir. maybe let's accept that he doesn't deal with assets, he deals with cash. Let me rephrase the question. How much cash is in the account, and what is that cash that is in the account? What does it represent? Because I think that's what I'm asking. Cash is money that was the product of stuff that we've confiscated. My question, therefore, is how much cash do we have in the account, and what does it represent? Are you able to give us that breakdown? That's the first question that I'm asking.
Yes, the cash in the account is the proceeds received from all the curators from the seized assets, from the actual orders of court that have been finalized. Assets that are seized are sold by the curators. The expenses relating to those assets are deducted, and then the proceeds are paid into the CORA bank account. The balance at this stage is approximately 80 million, I think. I'm open to correction. We have had the first distribution since CORA came about, happened last year, when proceeds were paid to law enforcement agencies and other beneficiaries.
All right. Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. My second question is, if I'm understanding you correctly, when we confiscate assets, it goes to curators. Curators realize those assets and deposit the money or give the money to NPA for the CARO account. Are you able to tell me how much money or assets are still in the custody of curators? How much do you expect from curators, and how long has that money been in the hands of curators?
We are able to tell you that. We have a detailed record of every case. You see, it becomes complicated because a forfeiture order is granted. And in the very large cases like the Dave King case, that order is in the region of over a billion rand. But this has been highly litigated, and it will not become the property of the state until the final order is granted.
I think the point should be more on those that are already finalized. Those that are still in the process, let's leave them out, because they're still... So you have a record of all finalized cases?
All finalized cases, they don't stay with the curators long after the finalization. If they're going to be disposed, they're sold, and the proceeds are paid over to us almost immediately.
Okay.
So there's no delay in that respect.
Okay.
I have been informed by the auditors that in one particular case, and I'm using it as an example, I'm trying to dispute what you say, that there is a case dating back to 2001 of about 300 million rand. Now, 2001 is about 6 years ago. What is the average time frame for us to wrap up these type of matters? I hear you saying that it's not ours until it has been finally wrapped up. Can you give us an indication of a time frame? Because if that money is sitting with curators, who is benefiting from that money? The criminal or alleged criminal doesn't have it. The state doesn't have it. Who is benefiting from that money at that point for those 7 years? Can you give us an indication?
No one really is benefiting from it, because the asset will be sitting with the curators. If you take for instance the Sheikh case, which is a recent case, some 30 odd million rand was granted, but it was appealed. So that now has to go the litigation route through the appeal courts, and only when it's finalized do we get.
I think maybe the question is, after finalization, what is the average time span before the asset is disposed of? After finalization, is it a month, is it 6 months, is it a year, is it 3 years? What is the average time span? Do you have an idea?
I don't have an idea of the actual time frame, but my sense is that
it would only take as long as it takes to sell the assets. If they're assets, if it's a cash award, it comes into the CORA account immediately. If there's no appeal on the judgment.
Just two last questions on this one before I move on. When this CORA account was opened, we had an organogram of about four people to run this account. There's only one person in that account, in that organization, if you can call it an organization for want of a better word. I put it to you that if we envisage four people and we only have one person, it's going to negatively affect the management of that account. Why don't we fill those positions, or are we not going to fill them in the future?
A short answer to the question is that two posts were actually filled this last month. So that will bring it up to three. The whole CORA thing, whilst the actual posts haven't been filled up to now, members of the asset forfeiture unit and other members of finance and procurement are helping the single member of CORA, so that there's no hold up from our side. The hold ups generally are from the curators and from the committee. The committee also doesn't sit as regularly as one would like it to sit to arrange distribution.
I'm going to get there. Okay. I wanted to get to that point. The people that sit in the committee are the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Justice, and the Director of the NPA. Are you saying to me that those are the people that are holding up the system? Because they are three of about five of them that are sitting there. You are saying the committee doesn't sit. It's not you that's holding it up. It's being held up by the committee. I just want to understand it, so we pose the correction. We pose the question to the correct authority.
No, I didn't say that the members are holding up the system. What they're holding up is the distribution. That's all they will be identifying as the actual distribution. So if anything, that's the only area that they're holding up. The system itself is not held up at all by them.
Before I move on, the Auditor General, and I need you to indicate if you think it's a fair question or not. The Auditor General says that the department is unable to disclose monies that are due to the state from this activity, because some monies are with the curator, some monies are still under dispute and so on. And therefore they're concluding that the financial statements of the NPA are materially understated, because there's monies that you can't account for. Is that a fair statement from the Auditor General?
I would say it's a fair statement from the Auditor General for this financial year that has just passed. For the previous financial year, we had an agreement with National Treasury that we wouldn't account for any assets until the cash is paid into the account. That is because of some of the difficulties around the valuation of the assets and the fees that are still to be deducted by the curators. So in this financial year, the National Treasury took the view that yes, we should start accounting for assets not yet sold in that window period around the financial year end. So I would say for this financial year, it is a fair statement, but it wasn't the case in the previous financial year.
All right. Final question before I move on, and I'm looking at the AG's office here to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly. My understanding is that this particular project or program received 31.8 million rand. Is that correct? If it is correct, can you explain to us what did that 32 million rand buy? Because we've had one individual, we've been unable to disclose financials here. In terms of value add, the 32 million that we received from cabinet or the department, what did it buy for this particular project?
Is the honourable member talking about the voted funds from Parliament for CORA? Yeah, the only funds that would have been allocated to those voted funds would have been the actual costs incurred by the personnel engaged in that thing. There wouldn't have been any other funds utilized.
No, Chair, the question that I'm asking is, I'm understanding it that 32 million, 31.8 million rand was allocated to that. Is that correct?
No.
Can you?
Chair, just looking at the financial statements, the funds deposited during the year, it will be sitting on page 136 of the annual report, are 19 million, and then the actual fund allocated by cabinet was 20 million. Yeah, allocated by cabinet, yeah.
Let me move to the broad account, Chairperson. And I want to refer to page 165 of the
Are you following up on it, or because that's what the AG is actually clarifying, that the money, because I think that question was not responded to, the money allocated to CAR by cabinet is 40 million.
Point that I'm making is if we've only had one individual working there, we've not been able to substantiate how much money we have according to the statement that you agreed with the AG. The question that I'm asking is if we've put that money into this project and we've not been able to do anything substantial in terms of employing people, in terms of receiving the money, what value add are we receiving? And that was the question that I was asking. But we will clarify how much money was specifically given to them for that project. Otherwise, I would argue that money was not maximized. That's the point that I'm trying to make.
You must remember that we're still at a developmental stage in the CORA. Money has been spent in that financial year on systems development. Consultants certainly were employed. So, it's not just the one individual, his salary that is voted money spent. I think in the statement of financial performance, it shows that an amount of 19 million rand spent for CARA for the financial year.
Thank you. Let's move on, Chair. I'm arguing that was money not well spent. That's what I'm arguing. And if you're saying it's 19 million rand, we'll take that by way of question. I don't think it was well spent, personally. I want to move on to refer you to page 165 of the annual report. And on page 165 of the annual report, the total budget allocation for the NPA is 1.5 million. Of that 1.5 million, 1 million was used for employees' compensation. 70% of our budget was used for employee compensation. I think it's excessive. You'd have to explain that to me. If 70% of money for that is used purely for salary, and over and above that, or included in that 1 million rand, 19 million rand was for performance bonus. 19 million rand was for performance bonus. The problem with that is that it's above the 1.5% that is generally accepted. 19 million, 2%. So, I think the committee's difficulty is that 70% of the budget is used for salary. 2% as opposed to 1.5% is given to performance bonuses. That's 19 million rand. Can you give me an indication, what is the staff complement of the NPA? So that I can work out roughly what is that 19 million rand in terms of per individual roughly.
The staff complement in the NPA is around the 4,000 mark, and our budget traditionally is mainly for the compensation of employees. We have always complained that we don't get allocated enough for goods and services. But you're talking from the other angle. Our organization is a people orientated organization. Yeah.
I can answer on the reason for the seemingly excessive spending on staff. We did job evaluations and people were upgraded in their posts. That is the reason for the amount that was spent. It was more for job evaluation. It was not for performance rewards as such.
That's what the AG gave us, but that's fine. Let's move on. I want to refer you to page 178 of the annual report. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The current fruitless... Are we there? Page 178 of the annual report. Current year fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 372 million. The previous year was 2 billion, huh? Am I reading it correctly? 2 billion was fruitless expenditure. 2.424. My question to you... is I'm looking at this report.
No, that's not our report.
No, that should be a DOJ report.
This is a DOJ report.
That's a DOJ report.
This one is our.
DOJ report.
All right, we're on the same page, Chair. Page 178. Notes to the financial statement, note 9.1. Now we're together. Page 178 in the big report, yeah. The fruitless expenditure brought forward, or the balance last year, was 2.4 million. Current year's fruitless expenditure, 372,000. The question that I'm asking is, according to the PFMA, fruitless expenditure, the accounting officer must investigate and we must recover, we must do disciplinary hearings, we must try and recover the money at the end of the day. It doesn't seem like there's been any movement from the previous year, let alone this year. From the previous year, there doesn't seem to be any movement. Can the NPA indicate to us, what steps are you taking to resolve this matter of fruitless expenditure? From the previous year, forget this year, just from the previous year.
We have a loss control committee that measures all the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. They're investigated by our security and risk unit, and recommendations are made to either condone expenditure or to to charge the individual. If the individuals are charged, then the debt is raised on the individual. So those processes are involved, are in place. The actual makeup of the 372,000, I'm not exactly sure of what it of what it comprises right now, but I guess it is for no shows at hotels and those kind of things.
Now I'm referring to the one before that, the 2.4 million. I said let's leave the 372. The 2.4 million, you're indicating that there is a committee, work has been done. How long does it take the department to finalize it so that we either raise the debtor or we discipline somebody or we take action against the accounting officer? Because the PFMA allows us to do that. How long does it take for that process to be finalized?
Chair, I'm sure the House is aware that we have our CEO was facing allegations, and during the time of her absence is when all this was happening. And various people were appointed to act, some of them are no longer in the organization. But as the CFO is correctly saying, that we do have a committee, and some of these debts are actually being collected by our salaries department. We have also asked our travel agents to give us a list of the people, because we have found that some of these are no-shows at hotels or where people are ordering things that they shouldn't. So there is a list that is, I have actually asked for a list from the travel agent so that we can deal with some of these matters. But as I say, it is during the period when the CEO and myself were facing allegations. And
can you please just check your mic is off.
I've finished here, unless you want me to repeat.
I have three more questions here. Thank you very much. On the very next, or page 179, receivables. Note 12.2, we have staff debtors of 12 million rand. Staff debtors. 30% of that, 3 million rand, is staff debtors older than 3 years. There's the potential of prescription in some cases, and all those things. I would want to understand from the department, why is it taking us so long to recover those debts? Is there any potential of recovering, and what is the potential of those debts being written off? I'm just looking at those that are older than 3 years. It's staff debtors. It can't be too difficult to find the individual. Why is it taking us more than 3 years?
Staff debtors has right now taken a high priority within the National Prosecuting Authority. We do fear that a large portion of that 12 million will have to be written off. A lot of those debts have prescribed. A lot of the staff have left the employee. Well, the bulk of those debtors are people no longer working in the National Prosecuting Authority. And our recourse is to hand them over to the state attorney. The state attorney advises that in most cases the debt is not worth pursuing, or where it is worth pursuing, it goes into that process with them. But there are a lot of them that are facing prescription right now, as you correctly point out. So we will be coming to the management of NPA and DOJ to either write off certain amounts of those debts and to institute action against the balance. We are also considering...
If you take that together with the question of fruitless and wasteful expenditure over which there has been no movement, I think it does not give one any joy or confidence that there is, I don't know whether it is lack of capacity or lack of willingness to
actually act with the with vigor to ensure that some of these things are sorted out. I hear you, it has been prioritized, but then I don't know since when that has become a priority and why it was not a priority all along. Do you want to respond to that?
Why it was not a priority all along is I can't answer that. I can answer for now because I've made it a priority. But in looking at the problem, there are some of the issues raised by the honourable member that have emerged, and we do have a large number of that 12 million rand debt is I think going to be prescribed debt, and we're going to have to face clearing the slate and making sure we go forward in a correct and strict manner as you rightly point out. We've got to take action quickly against delinquent staff members.
All right.
We do have a capacity problem. We have had a lot of people acting, even in the salaries in the debt section. There has been an acting senior manager for over a year. We have now appointed a senior manager, but we have also given additional personnel to assist. But I think what has been our problem is that the support unit has been growing at a slower rate than the actual other business units, because a 10% for growth has always been allocated, and we have argued that we need 30% growth, where we are adding X number of prosecutors, X number of investigators. We've grown only at a very slower percent. So we have had a capacity problem, but we also have had a skills problem. We have found that we have a very young support service, and there is really a skills problem, which we are also addressing.
I hear that. The issues we're talking about here, we're talking about recovery of monies owed to the entity. The follow-ups, the enforcement, I don't think the question of skills would necessarily feature as a decisive factor. You might be talking for the department, finance department generally, but I think we're zoning on the specific issue of questions. But anyway.
No, Chair, just to add to what you're saying, the NPA must understand that we look at everybody's books. There are 35 departments. Now, if everybody came to us and said, because of a skills shortage, we've got to write off 3 million rand worth of debt, if you multiply that over the 35 departments, it's going to be a serious problem. So that answer doesn't make us feel comfortable. It might be 3 million rand for you, but it's a lot of money when we take all the departments. So that of it's a skills problem is something that has to be rectified. And I mean, your response to us that, well, indeed it is going to be prescribed, you're going to have to face the music and start a new slate, doesn't sit well with members of parliament. And then you need to understand that as the NPA. You can't come here and say to us, it's not going to fly. Not with Scopa, certainly not with Scopa. Because we're looking at such other departments. And maybe one of the reasons why this is the case, sir, is because your senior management vacancy last year was 23%. Your senior management vacancy this financial year that we're talking about is 34%. One third of your senior managers are not there. So how do you expect to comply? How do you expect to do these things? It's no longer business as usual. Unless the NPA jacks up, we have a problem. You can't have 35% not there and not expect that these type of things are going to happen. So can you indicate to us, and let me also remind you before you respond to us, last year we spoke to a Mr. Graham, and we raised this with you. We raised this question. So let me quote what you said to us. Amongst other things, you said, so it is hoped that we will achieve two things. We will fast-track the recruitment, and we will skill our own staff to a degree. That's what you said to us last year.
we are sitting this year, we have a problem worse than last year's problem. Now you would need to, when you respond to us, bear in mind that we will refer to what you're saying to us now when we meet with you again. What plan has the NPA got to fix up the skill shortage, especially in the finance department? Especially in the finance department.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Well, the situation from last year is dramatically improved. Last year when I reported to SCOPA, there was no CFO. There was no senior manager finance. There was no senior manager procurement. There was those three critical posts are now filled. There is a CFO. There is a senior manager finance. There is a senior manager procurement. And we are filling most of the other vacancies as well. So the situation in finance and procurement has dramatically increased from the time that I was here this time last year. There was also the absence of the deputy CEO, the head of corporate services, and there was the absence of the CEO this time last year. The head of corporate services is back with us now. So that is another dramatic improvement in the right situation in finance and procurement.
Okay. My final question to you on this one. I think that what we're trying to do is to assist the department and to make it very clear that we're unhappy with what is happening. Around this very same matter, if I refer you to page 184, you know, our irregular expenses the previous year was 65 million rand. Irregular expenses the current year is 121 million rand. That's 186% worsening of the situation in irregular expenses. And I'm again arguing that it's got to do with this thing around correctly staffing our officers. So I don't need you to respond, Mr. Graham. I think we're trying to make the point that unless you do something extraordinary, we're going to have a situation getting worse every year. And quite frankly, as SCOPA, we won't allow that to happen. It'll be irresponsible for us to allow a situation to continue to deteriorate. So I'm hoping that your strategy of employing finance people will begin to arrest this type of situation. Because we can't have 186% deterioration of irregular expenses. We just cannot. And that is mainly, Chairperson, because they didn't comply. It's a compliance matter. That irregular expenses in the main is due to compliance. So really these are not rocket science things that we're talking about. They are matters that you can go back today, Director, and fix up today. They are matters that can go back today and fix up today because if there are policies, people must comply to the policies. So it's not rocket science. And the final question that I want to raise here before I hand over is maybe a comment and maybe you can respond to it. Do you have an HR policy or an HR plan that will address the functions that your department has to do? I get the sense that because we don't have a plan, we know what the NPA needs to do. We don't have a plan to fill those posts so that the NPA can perform its functions. That we have this type of situation where we have a 30% vacancy, 26% vacancy. Is an HR plan that satisfies your own core business, sir? Is there such a plan that you have currently? If not, I'm suggesting that you put that plan in place.
Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just to tie this together, I'll go back on that irregular expenditure. Somebody will just have to talk to those figures for me so that I don't quote figures that are not proper. If you check on page 184, right at the top, irregular expenditure, you find that in the 2005-2006 financial year, your opening balance was 1.147. I suppose that is 1 million. By the end of that financial year, there was an addition of 64 million, making it 65.3 million. When it comes to 2006-2007, your opening balance was that 65 million, and in that year alone, you have an addition of 121.3 million rand in regular expenditure, giving you a total of about 186 million rand. So, from where I'm seated, certainly, we're probably taking one step forward and two steps back. That's how it appears to me as a layman sitting here, but you may obviously want to respond to that, clarify that, and also the last question that he has asked.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, because I think it is very vital that we do clarify this issue. It definitely sounds worse than what it is. The Chairperson will remember that at the last COPA hearing we spoke about the Rentworks lease situation, which was a lease that we negotiated in conjunction with National Treasury. We spoke to them right throughout the formation of that lease, and all the indications to us was that it was an operational lease, and it came on the last day of 2005, where agreement was reached with the AG to show that as a finance lease and hence irregular expenditure to avoid a qualification in that year. So that accounted for 39 million in that financial year. This financial year, that same lease is still in practice, even though the National Treasury has issued a practice note to condone finance leases of vehicles where the lease is cheaper than an operational lease. But because that lease was started prior to the issue of the practice note, it is still considered as irregular expenditure. So that has to continue into this year. Then to add to our troubles, the lease of the building, the VGM building in Silverton where we have our head office, that lease was constructed back in 2002 with State Tender Board, with National Treasury. We had all those approvals in place with those people. It was a triple P handled by Deloitte as consultants, and as I say, we got approval from State Tender Board. We had approval throughout with National Treasury. It was touted as one of the best practice model leases, but unfortunately, that lease has been considered as a finance lease, or the components of that lease by the AG, and that added another massive amount going back from 2002 to the irregular expenditure in this last financial year. So whilst it does seem like there's irregular happenings, it's just unfortunate that whilst the NPA has worked closely in hand with Treasury and had the approvals all along, these leases have not met the financial criteria and therefore have to be shown as irregular expenditure. In the whole of the irregular expenditure last year, 11 million of that whole figure is noted cases which are under investigation. So the extent of that problem is not as bad as it reads in the book.
What should we say? If you had irregular expenditure of 1 million or 5 million, we would say, it's not bad, it's okay. What exactly are we trying to say? I mean, I can remove that 54 million, that 38 million, but still, you have a regular appointment, it's about 686,000. You have the CFM soft services, not in terms of contract, that's 17 million. You have, okay, the note case is 10.6 million. I mean, we're talking millions. We're not talking hundreds. And what we would want to see is not to have this, because they point to a deficiency or a problem. You see, if
if there's misunderstanding between yourselves and the AG or National Treasurer, I wouldn't want to assume that these people are letting you down. You, from the start, you work on a particular formula, and at the end of the process, they turn around and give you incorrect information. I wouldn't want to believe that that should be the case. But the point that we're making is that your regular expenditures have escalated. Whether by 100 rand or 1,000 rand, the principle of the fact remains that it is unacceptably high, or in fact, it's unacceptable. Maybe you can respond to the last question.
Just before you do that, and I take that point, I think also we need to understand that this document becomes a public document. So Joe Soap in the street, when he reads it, he'll interpret it as I have interpreted. He doesn't have the benefit of this explanation that you're giving. So if indeed it needs to be corrected between yourselves, Treasury, and the Auditor General, can we ask that you correct it? Because it sends a very wrong message out to the public. And I represent the public. I have to explain to the public. So in that sense, I think we'll continue to harp on it. Because we can't defend something that is indefensible in terms of pure figures that are shown in the annual report. So I think the sooner you guys fix it up, the better. That's the urgency of the matter, regardless of the explanation you've given us.
Yes, Chairperson. The CFM that you talk about is in fact the part of those leases that I was...
No, it's fine. Can you do this? Can you respond to his last question on human resource and management plan so that we can move forward?
Chair, I'm going to respond on the HR plan. But I just wanted to remind that last year, I think, was quite an abnormal year for the NPA, and this is after having an unqualified audit opinion for 5 years in a row. Abnormal in the sense that there was no CEO, no deputy CEO, very senior posts were not filled, no CFO, no head of HR. We have advertised the post of CEO. We have now filled the CFO post. We are filling the head of HR in the first week of November. So at least, and we have filled quite a number of senior manager posts. At the time when the auditors raised this with me of the HR plan, I then put a team into place with the acting head of HR. We are working on a plan. And I just wanted to also say that we have also changed some of our ways of recruiting. We have started automating the recruitment process, but we are phasing it in. We have automated the first part. For example, we can track from November to March this year how many applications we've received, 55,000 applications. We have filled a number of posts. I can't give you the number off the head, but during this period, we've actually had a special project sitting where we have a boardroom exercise where we have filled, I think in the last 3 months, Advocate Boucher can correct me, over about 300 to 400 posts have been filled. And this has assisted us because we have automated part of the process.
All right. Okay. Let's keep it at that. I have two follow-up questions before we have 5 minutes before our 5 minutes bodily break. Right, Honourable Plant, just a direct question, and then
very direct question, but it's got to do with Cara, because I want to go back there, because I don't think that Vincent got everything he was looking for. You see, what I'm concerned about is you've got this process. You've got the confiscating of the assets and then appeals, in other words, the legal process. And that has to follow its course. Then you've got somebody called a curator who then takes possession and custody of, let's say, non-financial assets, motor cars, furniture, whatever. Okay. And then you've got the cash. Now, I'm quite happy with your explanations in terms of the cash. You have accounted for the money that you've received and whatever. But what sort of control mechanisms and checks and balances have you got in place to check the asset, for example, a motor car, from the time it is received by the curator and sold, and then you receive the money? How do you know that curator is getting a fair price for that vehicle? Because it says, hey, Mr. Dutch's expenses. Does anybody audit that process? Are you satisfied that there's not assets being lost there, or value being lost in the process? And I think that's what we need a bit of comfort on, because there's not a lot of detail around that middle section of the process.
All right, thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm very conscious about time. I wouldn't ask a question because 11 o'clock we have to start with the other. Thank you.
No. I will still give you the chance, the right to. You're fine. All right? As long as you want to do it after the meeting, that you have no opportunity to ask a question.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to make a general comment on both the NPA and CARA.
Can we have a report to that person first?
Thank you, Chairperson. There are two types of awards. Awards that are made as a cash award, and they might see certain assets to as surety for the payment of that cash, and then there is an asset award. Now, the cash award is a simple case because then the criminal has to come up with the cash. If he can't, then we will sell certain assets and until we get the cash, the necessary cash that the judgment has been made. Where the award is an asset award, they are handed over to the curator who you might know are appointed by the master's office. So it's a process outside of the CARA altogether. Okay, so when that curator it is secured by the bond that the master holds, and when that asset is sold, the cash then less his expenses, and his expenses are all governed by the master's office. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Chair. Just a general comment on the NPA and CARA. Firstly, I think earlier there was a bit of confusion just in terms of where we were reading in the report that when you are making reference to the DOJ report, that the first section deals with the Department of Justice excluding the NPA, and then the second part then includes the NPA. I think when it came to the references to the pages, I think there was a bit of confusion. The second one raised by Honorable Smith on the revenue of CARA, to say that in the annual report of the NPA in page 136, it shows that the funds that were deposited during the year, you know, at CARA, which is revenue for CARA, is 19 million. And then on the expenditure side, the transfers and subsidies that were then allocated amongst the different organizations, it's 40 million. So when you look at the note that shows how that 40 million split was allocated, that is sitting in page 140 of the annual report, where 31.8 million went to the NPA, 3.3 went to the Department of Social Development, and 5 million went to SAF. So I just wanted to, if there was confusion, just around the referencing. And then the last comment is basically on the issues that you've raised in the audit report of both the NPA and CARA. I do get a sense that rather than you know, the response being what are we going to do about them, the response appears to be in some cases either no, this is not as bad as it seems, or you know, this was an interpretation issue, just got history. But I'm saying what we are saying in the audit report and the audit involves the process where we engage with the department or an entity and we discuss those and we ensure that what is included in the audit report is factually correct. And I would like to urge from the point of view of the Auditor General that the issues that we are raising here, if the attitude is going to be these are non-issues, chances are when you come back again here next year, we'll still be faced with the same issues. For example, the question of irregular expenditure. A lot of that has got to do with non-compliance with
supply chain management. It's sitting in our report. And you can't say that it's not as bad as it seems. So I'm just wanting to ask from the AG point of view that I think what the attitude that we should be taking is these things that have been raised in the audit report that are factually accurate, confirmed with the entities involved. What then are we going to do about them so that we can improve the situation?
Yeah. Well said. I think that is how we would want to look at these matters. And I'm looking at the Mala department. There has to be a way in which there is strengthened interaction to ensure that all these issues that we've raised are sorted out. And we're quite happy that some of your strategic areas, especially in finance, already have people appointed into them, and we hope that it will assist in improving the situation within the entity. Not just in terms of the general and overall management of the resources, but also in terms of correcting all these things that are here that have their own history. So that going forward we could have a set of financial accounts that that we're happy with. Right, thank you very much, Kishwin. Okay, let's have a 5 minutes for a department to run soundly. And furthermore, one of the few departments that there's no skill vacancy or no vacancies. So we shouldn't have any problems with departments in the future.
No.
If there is...
Comrade, no, they do have vacancies. You can attend to that.
Or maybe skill, no skill vacancies.
All right.
Yeah. The report is unqualified, but there is a question according to the Auditor General's report is that there is other matters, and other matters are mainly pertaining to deficiencies within the department. Now, all I'd like to know from them is there is these deficiencies, and it states there's a lack of appropriate guidelines, policies regarding security, administration, and monitoring. There's non-compliance with the internal policies and procedures, insufficient user training and awareness. Now, I want to know what steps are we taking to rectify these inefficiencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member. Our brief response is, I think the question relates to our implementation of the SEPT HR system. What we've done is our own internal audit section had identified those deficiencies even before the Auditor General came. So we started looking at what was to happen. But what we have done, Chair, to correct those deficiencies is we have appointed a SEPT project manager who is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the SEP system. She started in September this year. We have also appointed Govoda Incorporated to perform a total application controls review on that system, and they started on the 8th of this month. We hope they will be delivering their final product by the 23rd of November, and that will help us to close all gaps that they will identify for us to make sure that these identified deficiencies are closed. And we have also set up a SEP governance structure, which has a SEP technical committee, which oversees what management does regarding SEP. In addition, as a board, we've tasked the audit committee of the board to have a continuing and very close oversight responsibility of what management does to make sure that they close all the gaps identified by the Auditor General. I think that in brief is what actions we've taken, and it's an ongoing thing. One thing that we should not lose sight of, Chair, is that SEP was introduced for the first time in this past financial year. Hence, we had these problems. But as stated, we've taken corrective action to make sure that the deficiencies are closed. Thank you, Chair.
My sense is that before handing over to COVID Bonom, the Auditor General has identified areas of deficiencies. And I would imagine that if you have appointed a consultancy, you would want to find solutions to the issues that have already been identified, not for the consultancy to go around fishing for new areas of weakness when these are clearly tabulated. I'm just thinking in terms of the cost implication, whether out of the things that have been identified here, especially around the SAP system, yes, I think that is the one key issue that has responded to. You needed to have a consultancy, or did I not hear you well, that you would like them to identify gaps that need to be closed, or you are taking the report of the AG as the basis for seeking solutions for closing this gap?
Thank you, Chair. We are taking the Auditor General's report as a basis, and we thought it wise to appoint them to help us in the process of complying with what we had not done.
Yes, comment.
Thank you. Other issue of concern is the financial statements. They were seized on the 29th of August. But they state that reconciliations are not performed to verify data completeness in information recorded in the financial statements. And there were delays. Now, my concern is there were delays. Will there be delays in the forthcoming year?
Sorry, Honorable Chair, what page are you on?
No, I think the issue is that the submission of financial statements. You submitted them on the 31st of May, but then withdrew them to effect material changes. And then finally submitted them on the 29th of August. So the question is, to which I would add, why did this happen? And the question is, Are we going to have this recurring in future? What steps will we take to ensure that this kind of thing does not happen again?
Chair, unless I've got my facts wrong, I think that relates to the financial year 2 years ago, not this past one.
Yes,
that's correct, Chair. It's actually a matter that arose in 2004-2005. For the past 2 years, it has not been a problem.
Chair, that will be all for me, but Comrade Chair has a question or two to ask.
Chair, thank you. Chair, I want to take you to page 75. Under miscellaneous expenses. Now, if you look on page 75, these expenses, and you look at the columns 206 and then the one next to it, 207, there are slight increases. For instance, audit fees have gone up from 1.3 million to 2.02, and then computer software 5.6 to 5.8. And they all specified here, but right at the bottom, there is an item called other, and it's 45.483 million in 206. And it has increased by nearly 10 million to 54.104 million. Could you just maybe give us some details what this significant figure is and why it's called other?
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think I will ask the Chief Financial Officer to respond to that if that's allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. This line item that is shown in as part of miscellaneous expenses that relates to other
is made up of several line items which for disclosure purposes could not be disclosed separately due to the fact that they are immaterial. Such line items would include IT support, internal audit support, refreshments. Individually, they are immaterial, but we do have the details making up that amount. So it's quite a long list making up these small items. But for disclosure purposes, and also in terms of GRAP and GAP, we couldn't disclose all these line items individually. Thank you, Chair.
It makes sense, Chair. Although the other items are much smaller, which you do list, but maybe you can cluster them together in future. Chair, I'd like to go to page 52, my next question. If you look at the executive management remuneration, the total package there on the first column, basic salary is 6.1 million, and the bonuses and incentives is 2.1 million, which is nearly about 30%. I would just like to get some clarity on that, why that figure is so high compared to other.
Where are you committing?
I'm on page.
Right, you're on page 52 here. Which part? 52.
The column at the top of page 52.
Right.
Regarding the executive management's remuneration. The salary, oh, right. The total there is 6.1.
Oh, okay.
And the bonus is 2.1.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair. This is as per what the board has decided that the allowances, the bonuses of executive management go up to 30%. I think that's the short answer. I think what he wants is the wisdom behind that decision. Well, Chair, we recognize that the executive management of the Legal Aid Board work extra miles. They put a lot of effort into the operations, and the success of the Legal Aid Board is ascribed to what they've been delivering. And as a board, we decided to pitch their bonus levels at 30%.
Are you satisfied that that's an objective decision? Or how objective was that objective decision?
Chair, thank you. We did not just decide on the figure. We benchmarked with other like organizations elsewhere, and we thought that 30% was the best figure we could allocate to the bonuses of executive management.
Well, for me as an MP who gets no bonus, I jump a little backwards and wish I was somewhere else than where I am.
Chair, yes. and also maybe thinking back of what the Minister of Finance said yesterday, all that discussion about, you said that you benchmarked this against other entities. Maybe we can have some details of what other entities you used as a benchmark.
Chair, I don't have the details with me as we speak, because I didn't expect this question, but we can come back. We did, because as a board, we were concerned that, look, we don't want there to be a big gap between executive management and staff. We said, let's look at what's happening elsewhere, and we got a report which influenced our decision that way, but we can feed the information. But what I can say further is, it's also linked to the performance management system that we have in the Legal Aid Board. Each executive and other staff have performance contracts that they signed, that are reviewed, and it's all linked to that.
I see. Let me take Mr. Chen.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just to confirm that it is not unusual for senior management for those type of percentages when it becomes to be a bonus, which is, you know, a 30% or a 20% as part of the package. But what we do notice in that table is that when you look at the HR executive, that the bonus is more than the basic salary. You see, that to us is what doesn't make sense. because usually you prorata a bonus as a percentage of basic salary. So usually the basic salary should be more than the bonus. So, but you know, depending on the explanation, but that's usually kind of the trend. The basic amount would be more than the bonus incentive, but the practice itself and the percentage is, it, you know, it is not unusual.
Yeah, not unusual, but okay, let me leave the politics out of it. I wanted to pass this. Comrade Bonham started by congratulating them, but it looks like the further we dig, the further the echo of your congratulations is not repeated. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's my last question. Regarding the what was said about the remuneration committee that has been discussed as thoroughly and so on, I want to take you to page 49, a couple of pages forward. This is the attendance register of the board, the full board. Now, if you look at the names there, quite a lot of people have missed some of the board have missed meetings, and the attendance percentage is about 74%. Then the worrying thing on the next page, page 50, is the audit committee attendance. Now, there are six members at this audit committee, of which two of them, there were six meetings for the year, of which two members only attended two meetings. Then the remuneration committee, also, there were five meetings of which only one member attended all meetings. The other members either attended two meetings or three meetings. So I don't know what the discussion was because there was only a 64% attendance. Then the legal services committee was the same problematic. There were six meetings of which certain members only attended one meeting, certain with three and a bit more. And then the one that is a bit worrying to me the most is the board executive committee, which had five meetings. And only two of the six members attended all the meetings. One person actually didn't attend one meeting. And two only, three of the meetings, and the one person four, which gives you a 66% attendance. And I was just wondering, this is not really sending out a good message. Maybe there's some comment on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just
a minute. I was trying to look on page 51, but anyway, no. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. I think let me just deal with the issue raised by Mr. Kelly. The HR executive situation, the 36,000 that's reflected under basic salary, is her part of the salary that fell under this past financial year. She's the HR executive who resigned. And if you remember, the way we pay our bonuses, we look at the previous financial year. That's how we pay it. So that's why it looks as if it's more than the basic salary. But that's the executive who resigned. So we were paying it in areas. I think that's the explanation for that. In terms of board attendance, Chair, at all stage, all the meetings were correct. I think I want to put that up front.
Yeah. No. I don't think that is the point of focus or it's in dispute.
I'm coming with an explanation.
Yeah. No. I just also wanted to lay your fears to rest. That is not the unasked question.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of board attendance itself, I have spoken to those members that I felt had not been attending meetings regularly. That's the board. And that goes to the audit and other committee members or other committees of the board. In terms of the audit committee, one of those members who only attended two meetings had actually resigned because he did indicate that his life outside had become more demanding of him attending. So this arose after I raised the issue of my concern to him that, look, you're not attending as regularly as you should. And we are in the process of filling up those positions. I've spoken to the other member, and I've been given the undertaking that the situation will improve. I think that goes with the others, but that member who is pointed out in the board expo who never attended the meeting, that's the board member who became a judge. She became disqualified to attend other meetings because she was a nominee of the bar of the GCB, and as a judge, she no longer represented that body, therefore she could not attend meetings. That's why you see a nil reflection there.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. Comrade Bonhomme, you said you were done. I do see something on your fixed asset, control over fixed assets, system of control. Is it working efficiently, effectively? Because again, I see the AG has put a year there that might be 1 or 2 years back, but I do want to check currently your control system over assets. Is it working effectively? Is it efficient? Or what challenges are there? Because like almost all public entities have one issue or the other around the asset management.
Currently, Chair, there are no challenges around that. We've sorted it out. It was a problem historically. I think up to, if I'm not mistaken, 2004, 2005. That was the last time the AG commented about it. But currently, we've sorted it out.
Mlambo, Judge Mlambo and your team. We're hoping that those issues that you said are being attended to will be successfully attended to, and we'll have a clean audit report. Thank you very much.
Chair, it's not a question. Maybe just I think, for instance, in the future, when, for instance, with a judge, that a person that became a judge, in the report it doesn't look good, but I mean, if when you table the report, just put proper explanations, because it could actually be quite embarrassing. So I think we just need to tidy it up.
All right. Point.
Simple question, Chief. I noticed for 2 consecutive years now, we have a net deficit. Just wondering how you fund that deficit.
The deficit, I think you refer to the amount of just over 14 million. Right. That relates to the depreciation part of our business, and it's not catered for in the grant that we get because it's a non-cash item. That's why you see it like that.
All right. I already thanked you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay. Right. We woefully behind the time. But that should not imply that they were going to do a hush-hush job on public works. We certainly want to take our time and do our work as thoroughly as we always do and as is always expected of us. DG, welcome to this engagement. Before I hand over to Comrade Pierre, maybe you would like to introduce your team, so that we could then get started.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Manya Muroka. I'm accompanied by my CFO and the Acting Director General at the reporting time, Bringi Sidensaluba. And I'm also accompanied by our internal audit head, Zanele Mpumyelwa, with our representative here in Parliament, Adam Tombe, in the ministry. Thank you, John.
All right. Thank you very much, Comrade Pierre.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, I want to get into the problem with regarding fixed assets. Chair, it's an old problem which this committee has highlighted for many years, for I think 14 years already, 13 years. For instance, in our 99 resolution,
we said here that the committee is concerned about the deterioration of state property and reported problems with regard to the maintenance of repair buildings. The committee is further concerned that the National Asset Register will not be completed. That was in 1999 already. And then, according to research that was done by the AG, in 94, state property were registered under 32 different names. Now, currently, that list of 32 names is expanded to more than 6,000 names under which properties belong to all spheres of the state is registered in VSOP. Now, this amounts to 1.45 million properties. And there's no exact figure how much the state actually owns, but we guesstimated about 24 million hectares. Now, of that 1.45 million state properties, in the deeds office, only 338,000 properties could be found on your property management information system, the PMIS, which you referred to in your report. Of these 338,000 properties on the PMIS system, 256,000 properties did not have a 13-digit reference number to match the public land inventory in the deeds office. In other words, only 81,000 has a deeds office digit. Now, 43,000 odd of these 81,000 of the properties of the Department of Land Affairs did not even have a record. So it leaves you basically with 38,000 properties. Forced with this enormous problem, which you also highlight in your report, and the backup that is problematic, how are you going to compile a complete, valid, and accurate fixed asset register on the PMIS? What are your main challenges regarding this issue? Remembering that this issue has been coming on from 94 already. How have you addressed it? And can we please have a time frame, as it is something that we are counting people successfully and other things, but somehow it's difficult to get our properties in order.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the compilation of the improvement of the asset register is currently underway. When the department reported to this committee 3 years ago, it had indicated at that time that it needed some 250 million to actually do the entire exercise. And a year later, it was given 30 million over a period of 3 years by National Treasury to do that exercise. And it was done in phases, phase one, phase two. Phases one and two were joined, and that cost about 20 million. And phase two, which is phase B, it's costing about 10 million, and that will be finalized before the 31st of March. But if you look at the figure requested by the department then, and what was granted, clearly it did not come quite handy. What we're doing now is to commission two public entities linked to public works, Intersite and Safcon, to just go and do the physical verification of all properties owned by public works and or managed by public works and or not on public works records, but believed to be properties that should be under public works. On the issue of the asset register, what was never clear to members was the fact that an asset register is like a checkbook. You update it each year. And what has happened in the past was that it was updated then and then ignored over a number of years. So once that has been done, and that exercise is currently underway, we're looking at a first tranche of about 130,000 properties. And we're hoping if we do get necessary funding, which will translate into what we call incidental costs, because we'll be using state institutions to do that, together with the capacity within the department. We're hoping to round off the said properties and relate what we see, what we find, to what's on our records in terms of that.
Okay.
That's just on the issue of the asset register update and some timelines there.
Yeah, I think we can spend a lot of time, but we accept that it's a moving target and it's not something that's cast in stone. But, Jay, I'd just like to ask the DG. When a new school is built or a hospital is built,
I mean, there are not really that capacity in those departments to go and do the project itself. I mean, it's normally done by Public Works, am I right?
Public Works operate as follows. In terms of the PFMA, necessary budgeting for development of infrastructure comes from what you call a line department. They will issue what you call a procurement instruction, indicate to Public Works that in such and such an area would like to have a school built. And then Public Works will do that. We'll do it in terms of the necessary procurement processes. But that particular property or that property will be registered as Government of the Republic of South Africa to be administered by Public Works. And it will be added on the asset register. So that's the process.
Okay, now, in other words, what you are saying to us is that you facilitate the process, the line department say they want a school, for instance, but you facilitate the process, it gets registered on the RSA, but you take care of the whole the construction area. Right. Now, having said that, I was just wondering, you know, in the Business Times of the Sunday Times of last Sunday, October 28th, there is an item also in your report on page 41, which we will come to now. But the Department of Correctional Services are asking for request for pre-qualification for the construction of 5 new PPP, these private jets. And I was just wondering, what is your role in this team?
Chair of the 5 prisons. Once that instruction comes to Public Works, it becomes a PPP and is managed by Public Works. And just to give you just the status on the 5 prisons, the Kimberley one, the excavation has been done and there's work in progress in that regard. The Leacock one, I think that's the one in East London, there were environmental issues like the graves in that area, and that in itself halted the process. Then there are 3 more that we are discussing with the department to work in reverse from 2010 to now, to have those completed within 3 years. A challenge coming from the department itself is how to prioritize that and indicate to Public Works. That meeting has now been set for next week to finalize that. But yes, it is our work to see to it that all the 5 prisons are built.
All
right. If the department comes back to
okay, awesome. Purely at the conceptual level, what is your involvement as to the practicalities going forward? Let's leave that one out for now. Yes, Comrade Pierre.
Okay, then on page 41 of the report, it also said the 10, the immovable property and buildings. The second bullet, the Department of Correctional Services incurred expenditure amounting to 1.2 billion rand on improvement additions to buildings under the custodianship of the Department of Public Works. However, at the time of compiling this report, the DCS has not transferred these improvement additions to the department, and as a result, the PMIS and Note 37 to the financial statements are understated by 1.2 billion. But you just said to us now that you are the custodian and it gets registered in the name of the state. Just explain that to us, please.
Thank you, Chair. With that one, the department acknowledges this observation, which can be attributed to the following: lack of integration between the works control system, WCS, and the property management information system, which is the PMIS. And the department is currently developing an integrated asset management system, which once implemented will greatly enhance immovable asset management in compliance with the recently promulgated or act passed by Parliament called GIAMA, which is the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, and will be rolled out throughout the public works sector that includes provinces. However, the system under development is expected to be fully implemented by 2009-10, financial year, and in the interim, a manual updating the PMS with the CAPEX currently accounted for through WCS will be done to prevent the recurrence of this adverse auditing finding. There were some deadlines.
Thank you. Thank you, Gigi. I want to take you to page 22, if I may. On the right-hand side of page 22, at item 2.5.4.4, Department of Defense and Land Affairs and Department of Public Works. It says here, the Land Management Forum was set up by the Department of Public Works, Land Affairs and Defense. The purpose of the forum is to address asset management issues, such as bullet 1, reconciliation of property data between the three departments. Second bullet, identify Department of Defense, underutilized and unutilized properties. The next page there, the top land audit of DOD properties performance to determine. Last bullet, ensure the DOD underutilized, so on, so on, so on. My question is, the heading says Department of Defense and Land Affairs in the Public Works. Why isn't there any mention in this item of the Department of Land Affairs? And it's only looked as if it's an issue of defense.
So the paragraph, when it begins, it does highlight on land affairs. However, a handle on our part is the issue of testing of sites, which becomes entirely a land affairs issue. And to date, we've been informed by that department that a revised policy to amend the vesting of rights on properties owned by state is currently happening in that department. That's the only reason.
Right. Okay. Chair, if I may continue. On page 38, your audit committee. I was just wondering, you had five meetings of the audit committee, but only one person attended all five, and two people actually attended one. The one person was only appointed late, and then one was only four. Why is it like that?
So on Mr. Masaji, I'll ask Ms. Zanella to respond, but on Advocate Tim Utsiri, not only did the committee raise the fact that he attended once, but also his participation in meetings. And the department is currently making necessary recommendations to alter that. Just on the one member, Tim Utsiri.
Thank you, Honourable Member. In terms of Tim Utsiri, the reason why it took longer to appoint, we were looking for a chartered accountant who is looked up with risk management techniques so that we can appoint. So we have had approached a lot of professionals. We were not able to get someone. So hence, she was appointed from 1st of January. That was the time we were able to secure a risk management committee member.
Chair, if I may continue. Then you have an item here in your report, and it's also referred to in one of our previous hearings, where the previous minister said that the program covers the repair and maintenance of 720 lifts in government-owned buildings. We discovered that the original suppliers of the lifts were merely continuing to do the maintenance thereof without contracts. This is not in the audit report, but it's in the hearing 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But we rectified the situation, and then you also say, on your page 33 of this report, at the top there, it is on the top of page 33, special attention must be given to the requirement to ensure that all Department of Public Works owned buildings are complying with the National Building Regulations and Building Standards Act regarding facilities for the disabled. The cost to make the DPW buildings compliant is roughly estimated at 600 million, as it involves the installation of lifts in some buildings. Inputs were submitted to the asset management unit in this regard. Just two questions on this. Regarding the contracts of lifts in the buildings, which is more than 700 according to the previous hearing,
And this amount of 600 that needs to 600 million needs to be spent on making it compliant for disabled facilities. Do you have an estimate when this project will be completed, the backlog, and are all your contracts in place for the maintenance of these buildings?
So the making all state-owned properties, and starting with the ones under the complete ownership of Public Works, there's what we call the priorities of priority projects, what we call the APEX project approved by Cabinet to do so, and that's currently one of the 24 projects that we are doing, to make all government-owned buildings accessible to persons with disability. We've made our bid to Treasury, and we're hoping to get a response to that effect. But linked to that as well, which was also an earlier comment by the member, we juxtaposed that strategy to the one of rehabilitation of all government buildings that are unused. So it's a twinning program. We're hoping to start with that project from the 1st of April.
One last question I'd like to give my other members the opportunity as well. Just one question I'd like to get clarity on. In your report, in page 49, item 7, this is SCOPA resolutions. You are saying the latest SCOPA resolution relates to the 202 annual report, and then you page over to page 50 at the top, regards to report in the 205 and 6 annual reports, and in the middle of the paragraph there it says the department is however anxious to meet the committee to deal with the unauthorized expenditure amounting to 345 million incurred since the 202 financial year, as it believes the value for money accrued to the state, and therefore under the circumstances recommendation for the parliamentary approval. Two written requests for the audience with the committee to resolve the issues around the unauthorized expenditure were made in 204 by the former DG. Now, we touched on this issue in one of our earlier meetings, and we just like to get clarity on this because we are not sure in terms of the communication. Who was it communicated to us so that we can deal with this item?
Paul will respond to that question.
So, indeed, we have returned to SCOPA, and actually, when we received the invitation last week, it was the first thing I raised with Ndombi, the secretary, to say, Ndombi, how come now we are invited for 0607, whereas we have three other financial years where we've been seeking the audience of SCOPA for 12 metals as well. So, indeed, Ndombi just behind you. Has acknowledged that actually the letters have been.
Yeah, well, I must say, I'm not. Was it before the elections or after the elections? Because I'm. But yeah, and I think committee is raising this question basically because we want to address it. We discussed it yesterday in our planning meeting. We certainly would want to deal with that. Not actually to agree with you, but to deal with it. So we'll take our own independent decision whether to approve the unauthorized expenditure or not. Yeah, just a minute. Are you done, Kobe?
Chair, maybe while I've got the thing.
Are you raising something new?
Yeah.
Okay. Now let me allow Honourable Trent.
Chair, just a question to the department. Obviously, before Discovery can look at your unauthorized expenditure, you must motivate to the committee why we should approve it. Have you done that?
All that has been done.
The written.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Sorry, thanks. Do you have the record? All right. Okay, no, that's fine. If the records are there, that's all right. It will assist us in taking a decision whether to approve or not to approve. Let me No, let me pass this one. Let's leave it at that. We'll interact with it, and I think we should be able to communicate. Chair?
Look at the good aspect of what is captured in that document. And on Friday and Saturday will be a strategic session to finalize that. So the structure will be in the department at first, correctly capacitated. And at a later stage, if it is found that it is not adequately placed, we will go through the normal processes of de-establishing it from the state. What was mooted then was to allow it to be able to transact as a private concern. However, catering also on the socio-economic benefits for the department. And that part we found it lacking in terms of the motivation that we found. But however, in a month or so, we'll be able to come back with a clearer picture on that.
All right. I hope the chair is not in the doubt, because the portfolio committee can then run with it. Right. Are you done?
No, Chair, it's just a concern regarding, because originally the late minister said this thing to be a private thing, taking it out of the department. Now, it looks as if what you're doing now is first get it into the department and then eventually motivate it out. Because there are some entities similar to this which is already out of the department that we are now motivated to bring back into the department simply because they are not performing well outside there, and I think it's the wrong thing that we should rather build and beat this thing up instead of taking it out.
because it might be much more problematic later.
We want a bigger, better state than lean one. But anyway, no, thanks, comrade. Comrade Fugin.
Thank you, sir. Chair, I think I'll be dealing with the high rate on vacancies, unemployment. I think it has been a bill for many, many years, and then even President and state, I mean, national press, he always says, please, we shall try to make sure that we get the unemployment. And then we as government, we are under pressure that attacked by labor movement and everybody saying that the unemployment is getting hard. Now, maybe if the only the private sectors who are addressing this issue, we are not addressing, I mean, addressing it. What is the real problem with this high rate of unemployment in all segments across? What is the real problem there? Because we are giving out money and you budget and then you don't employ.
So just on behalf of Public Works, because I think that's where we're at. We do have special programs where the department contributes positively towards job creation and poverty alleviation. And we took an executive decision somewhere around April this year, in that financial year, that all the 922 vacant and funded positions in Public Works will be advertised. We are happy to announce that just over 600 of those have now been filled, and the remaining 300 will be filled before the end of the financial year. That is if we are not threatened by funding, the funding aspect, because that's the only need. So that's what we do, because we would not want to be seen as a department that contributes positively to job creation, yet we're holding on to funded and vacant posts. So that's what we do. With respect to the other departments, I don't think
that. Indeed.
To address you on that point, maybe, because we shall keep on saying that, well, now we are addressing it, or it will be done within a year, nothing will happen. On the 20th of October 2004, the same question was asked, where you had about 24% of unemployment, and the answer was, sorry, we are dealing with it, definitely, in the year 2005, everything will be done, and wasn't done. And then again, to make an example to you, DG, it took Mr. Mroka as a DG to be appointed after 16 months with no DG. The post was vacant from the 1st January 2006. And then DG was on April 2007. Why did it take 16 months? Such an important position. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Well, I hope you capture the essence of this question.
Yes, sir.
The question of we're dealing with this issue, it will be resolved, seemed to be a very easy response to give in front of the committee. But 12 months down the line, must still be settled with the same problem. And it's actually using your position as an example that you have a position that's been there for 16 months. Now, why should we have comfort that these other ones are going to be sorted out expeditiously?
Just on the DG's position quickly. Yes, it was vacant for that period. But we lost the minister in the 6 months of the person who was acting. And around June, we had a new minister who had to look at the department, look at a number of things. And I think the advert was released in August. It's just that the appointment of DGs, it's through cabinet. And that's what delayed the process, just in that regard. In the appointment of positions lower than DGs, I think that we received on the 18th of April a cabinet directive that senior positions must not be vacant for a period longer than 6 months. And that must be tied to our performance agreements. Certainly in mind, it is there. Thank you, John.
when we were a little bit worried about the the follow-up on accountability and the, on PFMA, the paper realized that you might be putting the wrong people at the wrong positions and all that. Then the question was asked in 2003 at my Van Dijk. Honorable Van Dijk asked the question and said,
"This is a very good memory.
What qualifications do you people have to that? I mean, the people that you employ." And then the whole high level was asked, the DG was asked, and we found that he has accounting science. The CFO also was much more on science rather than a CA, which I cannot dispute. Now the question was, when are we going to get a CA? And then the example was made that the big companies which can be compared to your department like Palos had plus and minus 40 by then, 40 CAs. And the answer from Gataya was that no, we have got no CA. Then I understand the 2 plus and minus 4 years, you have got now CA that you have now employed on the 1st of January this year. Is that right? And why did it take you such many years to do that?
I think again, let me emphasize the essence of the question is, fine, we're employing people, we have 600 people, blah, but are we employing people with appropriate skills so that you don't come here next time and say, we don't have skilled personnel, but we fill the post?
Okay, I'll allow my CFO to answer the one on the CA and the others, but just from the DG's position. I come from the construction and built environment. I hold a BPROC degree, a master's in public administration, master's in business administration and global executive development program. Yes. No, I'm trying to explain. And I'm explaining the exposure that as the current DG, I think is the first DG who comes from a sector that relates to the department. And all appointments lower than the position of director, those the appointments are made by myself. And people that are placed there are people that are correctly qualified and correctly skilled. For directors upwards, the recommendations that go through to the minister, they are checked by me as well. And that's exactly what we are doing. The reason we're doing it because the loss of skill is not only in South Africa. It's a pity people are only looking at South Africa. It's across the globe. And the number of people that we are able to hold on to, we retain. And the ones that we attract, we ensure that they are correctly skilled. For the CA, I'll allow the member to do
that. Basically, in the ideal situation, naturally, the department as well as any other government department would like to have CA among people with the CA qualification. Unfortunately, in recognition that it is not possible to attract people of that caliber to government, the Office of the Accountant General has developed normative manner of what it is that we need to the guide on the qualifications of people who need to join the to staff the finance functions of government. And we are very much in compliance with those normative standards. I can assure you, Honourable Member, that the only department where that appeals to see is National Treasury. And they are there for 2 years more to expose themselves in the complexities of National Treasury. So it's very difficult for other line departments then to. But for me, I wouldn't necessarily say that on its own is a problem. As long as you have people who have the adequate knowledge to carry out the functions that need to be done. Also, naturally, attracting a chartered accountant, you really need to be prepared to pay. And that's the reality of the situation.
And they're not prepared to pay.
Because this is what the accountant general and the DG in treasury as well
they've been telling us that they get them only because it suits them to for exposure, not for you.
Not for them, okay. All right. Yes,
completely. Thank you, Chair. Yes, I referred you to one of the transcripts of 2003-2004 on page 59/103, where I said 25% of vacancies were realized. And the answer was, definitely we are going to get it. Is it true that according to the auditor's report of this year 2007, the unemployment has jumped to 37.5? When I argued it was 24%, now it has been realized to be 37%. What are you telling us? What is really going on there? If I refer you the page, I think I can repay you page 124.
Okay, I suppose we're talking about vacancies.
Yes.
In the department. Alright. Are we having the same figure? I mean, the yes or no?
It's basic. I'm not so sure about the figure, but what I do know is that the department has a huge number of resignations in the past because of loss of skills, and we went out of the way to go and correct that. And what we have here on page 124 depicts 17.5%, and we're struggling to find out where the honourable member finds it.
All right, so it's 17%. All right, okay.
Sorry, are you looking on page 124? No, 124. Yeah, the last but one.
Page
7.4.
That's it, yeah.
Yes,
that is only overall is 17.5. Only in NPWP is 37.5. Oh, I point four.
Right, while you are on extended public work program, I saw somewhere you quoted, it was quoted that you have employed 661,617 employees. To my understanding, EPWP can function for one day or 1 week or 2 months. Are these people still employed? They reflect the employment, these 660,000. Or it was just a short term and then they are no more around. Okay. That is on page 35.
Okay. Chair, I think earlier you said the 37.4 EPWP in the department, that has been reduced currently. Of the 600 positions that we filled, 70% were people who are under EPWP. On page 35, what the honourable member is referring to is that if you read that, it says network opportunities created. And the timelines thereof are dependent on the environment. It's a government program for 5 years. And that figure, midway through the 5 year period, constituted 59% achievement. So that those are work opportunities and they vary. Thanks.
All right.
I had a brief note on salaries and increases on bonus. It seems to be too high. The percentage in 2005 and 2006 performance bonuses was 2004 and 2005. It was 40.44%. And 506, 15 points, that was 2005 and 2006. And then 2006 and 2007, It's again too high because it's 30.14%. What are the problems of that performance bonus? Because one, if really you pay performance bonus, it proves that maybe the job is going alright and there will be no queries and everything and all that. But now, such big numbers, can you pay me a performance bonus if I'm not doing well?
Chair, the CFO will support me, but on page 76, under performance award, for 2006/07, we have 19.953 constituting 0.5% of basic salary, and the allowed percentage is 1.5. So we came in way below. So if that's not understood, then the CFO will explain. Thanks.
All right. No, it's fine. If you talk it percentage wise, then you're safe, and I see that's the umbrella you're running to. No, it's less than the 1.5. So as long as it's less than 1.5, it's fine. Are you rounding off? You seem to have an appetite for questions today.
Yeah, no, I just want to hang on allow some more so to your mother send you.
All right, okay. Comrade Lorraine, and then we'll move to Honorable Rebecca.
Thank you, Chair. I'm on page 116, note 10.2, other payables. My concern is around claims, which are on page 94, if I'm correct, listed as a statement of contingent liabilities. Chairperson, I would like the department, if the two of them are linked, the department to explain whether these claims are against the department, and if so, why should they be having so many claims against them, and what are they going to be doing to minimize the number of claims?
Thanks to you. The two references that you highlighted, Honourable Member, are unrelated. The one on 10.2 talks about amounts owed by the department as of 31st of March. But the your reference to statement of contingent liabilities, these are possible claims against the state by people who have exercised their right to challenge the department or on a number of issues. And actually, this is to be expected if you consider that our department is a procurement department. We have no less than 7 billion worth of procurement in a year. And in such situation, as everybody will know, government procurement becomes a serious business for the players out there. So in the main, all these things are claims that people have lost. And in our experience in the past has been that the department has not found itself eventually paying these things after we've explained the procurement process that has followed. But in the interest of comprehensive reporting, we report on all unsettled claims as at the
All right. Okay. The one on that, yeah.
Mr. Chair, just before I move to the asset management, on page 125 of your employment and vacancies by salary bands, could you perhaps just explain to me, give me a better understanding of your highly skilled production levels, level 6 to 8, the permanent one, and your highly skilled supervision level, the ratio between the two, which seems to be very high, and even if the supervision is extended beyond the production side, what is the actual ratio in terms of supervisor versus the person that's got to do the job?
These positions are the ones where, in the main, the department competes with the outside world in terms of mobilizing the resources and the keen competition in that environment. For example, for your level 6 to 8, that's where our junior project managers are paid, and the levels 9 to 12, the so-called mid management in government terminology, is where our senior project managers are paid. And one of the things that the department has done in recognition of the scarcity has been to engage the tertiary institutions, as well as the DG and the minister also went to Cuba sometime in July to get Cuban professionals to come and assist the Department of Public Works and the provinces in this regard. So these vacancy rates are really as a result of this, particularly the booming in the production industry, really making things even easier in the sense that the private sector grants whatever skills they need.
Just to add on that, the counter offer process that we embark upon, when we do that, it's usually just above the threshold, the allowed threshold by the public service code. Thank you.
But if I can then be a bit more specific, supervisory to me means that they no longer doing the production job. They are supervising the people below them to do the job. They check that the job is being properly done. Now, what is troubling me is the ratio between them and the real production units over there. It says here that your highly skilled supervision, even of the post-fold, is 782 versus 1,050. Is there a misunderstanding from my side, or does that work out to about that one supervisor has got about two people that he is supervising, or are they also supervising other people in the department?
I'm sorry, I think here we are caught in the DPSA, Department of Public Administration's terminology, because the in an admin department, for example, like education, DPSA itself, there, for example, you would expect that someone in levels between 6 to 8 and 9 to 12, because all their functions are admin inclined, it makes sense to use this terminology. However, we have to report on, to use their template in reporting on these things. Because for us, 6 to 8, as I said, it's your junior project manager, whereas 9 to 12 would be your senior project manager. More people will be on the field. So it's more the difficulty of trying to use a DPSA determined template and bring it to a production environment department like ours.
So therefore it's more related to the pay, to get him onto the pay level. More or less the same as what Idi Amin did way back when he promoted all his soldiers one rank. So he didn't have any soldiers left. The lowest one was a deputy corporal. And the generals became field marshals. Yeah. I would then move over to the question of the asset management. On your asset management, it says there that during an asset count, some state-owned houses and offices reveal significant shortcomings such as where the assets belonging to the department were found in houses but could not be traced to the asset register. And similarly, assets appearing in the register could not be physically verified. And the number of assets were not barcoded and number of duplicate assets were found on the asset register. Now, you've been warned about this, that this is a ticking time bomb. In the 04-05 financial year, you had a management letter. And then in 05-06, again a management letter. And now, you've got a qualification in terms of this particular aspect. What is the present state and what are you doing about this particular aspect?
Thank you, Chair. On that one, Chair, the department has reviewed its business process around the management of movable assets and has put in place adequate measures to prevent recurrence of weaknesses revealed by the audit. It needs to be highlighted, though, that the duplications identified by the AG is not an indication of deterioration on internal controls over asset management, as the asset register referred to relate to work in progress, as indicated by myself earlier, of the service provider appointed to develop an asset register. That would later be compared to the electronic asset register of the department, as the latter is a function of systems interface between bus and LOGIS. We need to further indicate that the department currently as well has limited access to the properties, what we term prestige properties, owing to a number of reasons. One such reason would be the issue of security for political office bearers. And the department is currently investigating innovative ways, enabling it to execute its responsibilities within that particular framework, whilst ensuring that prestige clients and security status is not compromised. Neither is the status of the issue of access by the people auditing that. So we're handling that currently.
Okay. I'm grateful to hear that, and I trust that next year with the new financial statements that we will not have another qualification on this, neither an emphasis of matter on this particular aspect, because it's a long going type of thing.
Chair, I think so. Perhaps I need to be practical about this. See, when a minister is given a property owned by state to occupy, use thereof becomes private, in that when you access that property, and in terms of applicable processes, you need the clear approval of the occupant of that property. And in most instances, if the audit is carried out and the minister is not available, or that, those are some of the things that we'll be looking at, and then we will be engaging the AG's office to find a better way of ensuring that.
But obviously, the cases that will involve ministers and deputy ministers are very limited.
In this instance, the qualification, I think, targeted precisely them.
Yeah.
That's all. It was like you found movables that were not barcoded as opposed to movables put there by a minister. And at the time of the auditing, the minister was perhaps in cabinet, overseas, or elsewhere. And the domestic would not be the helper. So we look at
this. I mean, is the process so inflexible that it is a one-off kind of thing? I mean, you go to Minister Matikiza's house now, he's in the meeting here, he's not there, and...
Chair, if the people are commissioned by the AG to go and verify the movable properties in state-owned properties, I think they use their own timing to do that. And I don't think it's in sync or it goes together with the occupant. And that's the innovation that we're talking about, that we will work out a model with them. And then we hope that there's no repeat of such a scenario.
Right.
It's the only qualification that's...
Okay. That's fine.
It also states in this report that additions and improvements of properties were not updated and in the immovable asset register resulted in the verification of the amount disclosed in the financial statements. It is there that were inadequate policies and procedures over the monitoring of immovable properties resulting in questionable integrity over the completeness, accuracy, and valuation of the immovable asset. It's also again qualification from the previous year, moving from emphasis of matter.
It refers to what I read earlier. Yes. So we are addressing that.
Then in closure, just with regard to your creditors, and I'm particularly concerned about the small creditors, the 30-day non-payment situation, your department is probably holding the key for small business and particularly emerging businesses. And I can assure you, if you wait 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, sometimes longer, for payment, you can just as well close your little shop or whatever you've got in terms of rendering of services. What are you doing about that? Because this cannot be tolerated at all.
So in the strategic way forward, there are two categories. One is to say any invoice submitted to the department and verified by the department, it will be paid within 30 days. And the assessment thereof, there's a model that we're putting in place. And in an instance where you find an invoice and the verification is delayed as a result of the contractor not complying in terms of correcting the snags, it will be categorized differently. But in all instances where the blameworthiness of the mistake in the invoice is not attributed to the contractor, that part, it's a spotlight now in the department. The reason being, we don't want to see people going down the drain because of our own administrative hurdles. It's a top priority in the department currently.
But do you find 30 days stipulation reasonable and workable?
So what we say within 30 days. So in other words, if it is an EFT, an electronic funds transfer, and it's confirmed on a particular day, normally it's paid within 4 or 5 working days. So that's what it means. And there will be certain categories. And we've also asked the people that sort of manage various portfolios to come back to indicate a success rate in terms of number of people paid in a shorter period, but compliant to applicable prescriptions. So the 30 days is not to say we will pay after 30 days. We're just saying within 30 days, but at least...
No. My question is, do you find the 30 days to be long enough a period for you to process? That's what I'm asking.
If the invoice is certified and the contractor is not at fault, it is enough. It's only in an instance where you go back to the contractor and the information required should come from the contractor.
So your process is from the day the contractor submits his claim right up to your payment date, assuming that they are not glitches. Say 30 days is a very, very long time for you to process. I see. So it will be that AG. There are different internal processes in departments in terms of how they process claims. There is no standard procedure prescribed. Yeah, I want to have to check from the AG.
Yeah, actually, I think as it relates that the 30 days is the standard period that comes from legislation, so the departments basically work around that. But I think specifically for public works, specifically when you look at the nature of some of their suppliers, particularly in the expanded public works programs, that's where the kind of faster against response rate comes from.
All right. No, that's fine. I just wanted to clear this, because only last week someone sitting where you were was saying 30 days was just too short. in relation to their internal processes. And you're saying 30 days is just too long. So I'm happy with that. It's fine.
Just a concluding remark in terms of this. If everything is perfect with the invoice, no glitches, no nothing, would it be in order for the service deliverer to then, after 30 days, add interest if there's non-payment, so that we can list that interest as fruitless expenditure or unauthorized expenditure next time?
Definitely. But I think we can also ask that if he goes beyond a specified period for correcting that, we can have a negative marking to that effect. But we also want to indicate that we also have a toll number, a toll-free number, where people can then call and say, if your officials are telling you that they are waiting for me to correct the invoice, that is not true because we complied. The difference, the challenge is that we need somebody who is very capable to man that phone, not just to take the calls, but to be able to convince project managers to act accordingly. That's what we're looking at the moment. Thank you.
It is not there. It is not there yet.
The telephone number? We're working on that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not there. You're working on it. The telephone number and the person, capable person who should man it. So in the meantime, what happens?
It is not there because we're discussing it on Friday and Saturday. So we're hoping to come back within 2 months' time.
Right.
But we'll report on a monthly basis to the portfolio.
All right. No, that's fine. Right. We are done, except that Bob Matigiza has other issues that he would like to raise.
Perhaps let me depart from a brief remark that financial year 2003-2004, the Department of Public Works appeared before this committee. I specifically dealt with the issue of rental debtors. And then I hasten to add to say that we basically are dealing with the same issues that we dealt with then. But apart from that, let me revert back to my area of responsibility, my focus area. I will be then dealing with the other matters, and one of which would be the issue of rental debtors. The AG identified the following deficiencies within the control environment of the department. A, the department's database for debtors is not up to date. My question is, why is it this? Is it the lack of capacity? If so, what capacity? Or is this due to the vacancy rate? Why would the department assign incorrect addresses to debtors? Lastly, what measures are being put in place to alleviate recurrence of this situation, which is very basic to me? Thank you.
Chair, the rule, the rental stock management should in fact be managed using universal norms of doing so. And I think currently in the department we're not doing that. And what we're looking at is to say, if you are in a rental stock, you must be managed accordingly to that effect. And in an instance where, I'll just give you an example, where you do have...
Let's do this, DJ. The question is, why is it not being done according to expectations? And what measures are you taking or have you taken to correct this? Taking into account, as indicated, it is an old problem, as old as the mountain. When the department appeared here for the 2003-2004 financial year, the issue was on the table. And today, the 2006-2007, it's still on the table.
Yes. So I didn't want to go to 2003-2004 and indicate that the recording by the department indicates a slight improvement. And since you see the reference to the 14 million improvement and the decrease.
But
what we wanted, the department is currently...
No, you see, from where we are, we want eradication, not like improvement. So that's why the question is more on what measures are being taken to ensure that these things are sorted out.
Okay. The measure taken is that the department must not be candid about this. The department must go and act professionally in correcting the situation. That's why we refer to the universal model. We're going to apply models that will help value add to the department. And in an instance where you include what we call social aspects of it, for an example, if somebody is in the rental stock and pays 10 rent and has been paying 10 rent for the last 15 years and is an official, from a social point of view, you need to tell that person that a year from now, your rental amount will be market related, and if you do not honor that, these are the steps to be taken. You forewarn a person long enough, because if you go, the law will protect that person currently to say you created it. So that model is being worked at now and will be implemented.
From when? When soonest can we expect implementation?
We looked at the document a few weeks ago, and we're doing some improvements. We're hoping to do it in the new financial year. And in part, we'll do it in this financial year, so as not to get the qualification next financial year.
All right. Okay, thank you, Chair. If I may continue. One other observation by the AG is that there is still an indication of inadequate recovery of rental debtors, which has resulted in longer standing debts and write-offs at the year end, amounting to about 715,000 rand. Now the question is, what is the reason for these rental debtors to remain outstanding for that long, to the extent that they are written off?
Chair, that perhaps is not covered in the broader view, that when we go that route, that's what we want. Otherwise, I can read what we said here as a management response. It reads as follows.
No.
Okay.
That's the problem with global views, because then they cover everything in a generic response. I prefer pointed responses. If you understand this question well, you are supposed to be collecting rent, but what is, if I get him well, you are not collecting the amounts that are due. Of course, not in all instances.
Yes.
But in relation to those instances, that is not happening. Why is it not happening? As opposed to maybe the earlier one that we were responding to in my specific.
Chair, the good occupants where we are able to collect the rental, we will sustain that process. But we now qualify the part which we are having problems, and that's where we're going to do some improvements to indicate. And hence I had to sort of categorize that in an instance where there are social issues, that people would come forward and say, the department is victimizing me, it's doing all sorts of things. We'll give them enough time. But where it's just a blatant rejection, or just people not willing to participate in the process, we will take necessary processes to correct.
Chair, can I have a quick follow-up on that one? Would you disagree with me, Mr. PG, if I said one of the reasons why you would have this long-standing debt, it is because in the process you have assigned wrong addresses to your debtors so that you cannot trace them and effectively put them to book? Would you disagree with me on that?
Chair, the auditing of all properties owned by us, including the rental stock, will actually correct that. There is a certain percentage of the portfolio where people are wrong. Yes. We will address, but not entirely.
Can I just for you, Chair? I must just say that, you know, this finding that you have incorrect addresses is a very unfortunate finding. And we will try to explain to the agent. What is happening is that the information that is sitting on the system is not comprehensive enough to contain all the essential information that you need for a better management.
where you find the information that you need is in the file. Now, the AG will confine themselves to what was on the system. And it's something that we explained to them, that the kind of people that carry out this work in government, not only in public, but throughout, are your old government, your 55-year-old and above. And those people are child computers. So,
what's wrong with them?
They want to do the bare minimum work through computers. They will keep their old brown files, and this is really important. So, in other words, in our correspondence with the tenants, we make reference to what is in the file, in the brown file. So hence then there was the AG says the addresses are, we don't have correct addresses, but the correct addresses are on the file, but not on the computer, unfortunately. But then also talking about the recovery, the need to write up data. These amounts tend to be small in the bigger scheme of things, of the way the state attorney looks at things. So it never enjoys priority in the office of the state attorney. Because remember that when people default, we take them to justice to process the recovery process through the state attorney. And our frustration is that just the state attorney is not as responsive as they tend to be. For example, if you need them assistance for them for a median claim and above kind of thing. So hence it takes time for them to advise us that on the basis of what we have right before. Unfortunately, we can't write that off before the state actually advises us.
Can we check, is it not in part maybe the fact that I'm just trying to check the extent to which your officials who are supposed to be following up on these matters do their work consistently. Because it might as well be that, yes, we have the deadline, but could it also not be a factor that maybe some of your staff are actually not doing their work as they are supposed to do, and their supervisors are not properly monitoring the work that they are doing, so you end up having all this kind of thing.
Sure, in fact, that's that, and that's what we're trying to address. We're trying to sift that those that are capable of doing the work are sort of protected and to continue that work, and those that are not must be then shifted.
Sure, you partly covered me, because I wanted to say, would they disagree with me when I was saying we find ourselves in this sort of situation purely because there is lack of control and monitoring. Let me illustrate my point. For example, the SDP Minister of Health was said to have owed 27,000 rand. In this instance, you know the person, you know the amount. But in my calculations, she must have owed that at the rate of 375 rand per month over a period of 72 months. And you know that person, you know his address, there's nothing lost about that. But you could not recover that amount for this delayed period. To me, that's lack of control and monitoring. Would you disagree with that?
So there are issues of protocol. I mean, we do have that list. And we know who owes what and everything. And that list is submitted to the minister and then submitted to cabinet for members to respond to that. But the list that we have currently is up to date.
I think the issue is the principle. The example was just J. The issue is monitoring and control. But I think you have answered it. It's to say, partly yes, that is indeed part of the problem. But then there are other components to this challenge.
But it has improved that.
Okay. Okay, let's continue. For the review of the annual report for the financial year 2003 and 2004, the department appeared for public hearing before this committee. And
One of the basis for collaborating was the weaknesses on gender subsisting, in particular the PMIS. At this hearing, the department, in the person of the accounting authority, the DG then reported to the committee that a number of corrective steps have been implemented. That being the case then, why are we today talking the same weaknesses that we dealt with then with Mr. Maseko, the then DG, in the debtor and debt collection systems? What has happened to those corrective steps the accounting authority referred to? What has happened, one, to the property management units? Two, what has happened to the best practice standard lease agreements with the client departments, which included an interest clause that did not previously exist? Three, what happened to the age analysis module, which was incorporated into the PMIS, where the generated information was discussed at management meetings? Perhaps can I pause there?
The honorable member's comments are true. We can relate to that, to those undertakings. But we have every reason to say that actually we are seeing the gains of that. For example, if I refer you to page 75 of the annual report, you will see there that in 2005-06, rental collections amounted to 20 million. 2006-07 is 25 million. I don't have the previous years, but I can assure you that one sees an increase, a year-on-year increase on revenue collection. So our processes, those commitments that were made at the time, were implemented, and the results are evident on the increased amount of rental revenue.
But that's not it needs to be looked at against what is the total. Do you have a sense of the total expected revenue to be able to say if we have moved from have moved from 20 million to 25, to what extent does this represent a near climax? You know, so that you're able to say, look, don't look at the improvement from 2025 and say, look, it's 25 million. Is this significant? Is it related to your maximum? Because if your maximum is 50 million, and you have only moved from 20 to 25, then it pales significantly.
Okay, the exercise that we're doing in terms of the portfolio in its entirety is exactly to look at the maximum amount. If it's 200 million, we'd like to say that's our target and move towards it. Currently, it's 20 million to 25 million, but it did not indicate the maximum. So that's what we're currently working at, getting the amount. But Zingy can explain further.
If we don't have that maximum, then maybe let's just acknowledge it and move. Because it's only when we have that maximum that we can start to put sail to that movement.
Then you say, one of it is the fact that there is forward movement in this, but then it is not complete. If it were complete, it would not have been on the audit report. So that is the issue. But however, let's continue. The AG also identified as one of weaknesses the fact that policies and procedures on rental debtors were still in draft and not implemented. Now, the question that begs to be answered, if that is the case, so on what procedures did the department operate if you do not have fully operational procedures? What did you base of your operations on rental debt collection? And then secondly, obviously, why were the policies still in draft and not approved after such a long time. And what is the status now?
Not sure.
For the policies.
Basically, the department has gone through a transformation process. At some stage, we had what we call state property holding. It was in the department. Now, we devolve this function to the regional offices. And that brought a challenge of refining our business processes to ensure that they talk to the reality of our current circumstances. So, what happened at that time was that the state property holding policies and procedures were followed, but then developing property management policies, which is really what the AG is talking about, that those property management policies were not operational during the financial year, which is a correct observation. But it doesn't mean that we are operating in a vacuum. The only thing is that those policies and procedures were implemented on the 1st of April 2007. As you will appreciate, any policies and procedures that talk to your internal control environment, ideally you want to commence up implementing them in the beginning of the financial year. So that's really what has happened. So those policies are being implemented.
All right. And what is it? Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure, but I'm convinced. However,
No, be sure. Are you convinced or not?
No, I'm not convinced. Okay, fine. But let's continue in the interest of time. Also, the identified were the weaknesses in the form of payments of invoices amounting to 10.7 million are not made within 30 days. That, you know, that's been cashed. But I would also like to say, what is the average turnaround time for the department to pay these invoices? I know these exceeded 30 days according to the regulations. But what is the normal outside of that 30 days turnaround time, and why?
Basically, with the invoice can be paid within 10 days upon receipt, because we receive the invoice, it gets processed, and then you have the 5 days reserve bank sticker requirement that have to take place once the payment is in the system. But as the DG was saying, that the area where you pick up late payments are in the construction invoices. Because remember that when our quantity surveyor receives an invoice, they go on site to do the measurement. And in that process, they may actually find that the contractor in question overpriced or overcharged the department. And then a process of interacting with the contractor to issue a revised invoice so that a new payment certificate is prepared. So in all instances, from our analysis, all our payments that have not been made within the 30 days are in the construction sector, and in all instances, it's either where the QS who initially disagreed with the contractor's initial invoice, or the wealth inspector for smaller contracts disagreed with the contractor or an assessment. That is, but in the general situation, our invoices we can pay in ten working days.
Thank you, Chair. I hear what the CFO says, but I believe that explanation is the explanation that he could have given during the audit process, during that exchange process of things. We shouldn't be now, he shouldn't be saying that to me. He should not, in fact, this issue be on this report. So it does not explain why we still have it.
Chair, the auditor gave a report on his findings. Not on the reasons that you've given to their findings. In the same way, you find elsewhere that they say the financial statements, other than this, they fairly present, but they still report that there were material changes in the financial. That's the way they report. I don't necessarily think it would have prevented the AG from reporting on their observations. Everything that comes across.
Okay, I'll accept that. I'll accept that.
Okay. No. Let's think. My assumption, Mr. Taluba, is that the issues that the HOs put on either qualification, emphasis on matter, or others, issues that the HU believes that do need to be fixed. Those that they have come across that are okay, they leave them out. I certainly believe that is how it is, because the intention of bringing up issues and having us engage in this manner is how do we assist each other to find ways and means of correcting these things so that they don't recur. Okay? So, Matigis?
One last question, Chair.
Just
a general question?
Yeah, that must be the last.
Okay. I've cut myself short. Given the history of the issues that we are dealing with here and the nice promises about the corrective measure being in place and in the process of being implemented, what is it this time which is different from the previous occasions which would assure this committee of a better annual report this coming financial year, i.e. 2007-2008? Thank you.
Thank you. The Honourable Member will recall that we have not been met SCOPA for 04-05. We have not met SCOPA for 05-06. So the promises that were made during the OG-04 are the ones that made us not to come here. So what I'm trying to say is for the last 2 years we had an unqualified audit report. And if improvement is measured by whether you have a qualified audit report or not, the DTIC has already indicated that the two issues that have given rise to the qualification, we already have put in place measures that we can assure this committee that actually come 07-08 audit report, then we don't come here.
Chair, Mr. Zanuma indicates that they had it in the bank for 2 years. Why let it out of the bank this year?
Chair, I think we are addressing all those issues that have been attended to, and we clearly do not want to come back next year. We want to come back like the legal aid board, just the ceremonial appointment.
No, we want you back. We enjoy your company. All right, Comrade Machan and Comrade Pierre, so that we were able to close.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson. Just a quick question on the rental issue linked to the protocol story, which we are told right now. Doesn't the department feel that it is irresponsible not to collect what is due on rental in time and only want to act when there's a crisis? You know, it's like you have that ace under the desk, and then something wrong happens, we take out the ace. Do you think it's responsible?
All right. Comrade, can you, so that you answer both questions at the same time? Yeah.
Yes, Chair. No, maybe, DG, if it's not your department's responsibility, then maybe if you can assist Parliament, because if you look at where your mic comes out there, where you're sitting, those holes, it's been like this for 2 years. And if it's not your responsibility, maybe you can assist Parliament that it becomes complete. Thanks.
So let me just answer the last one first. To say that, indeed, I would not want to come in. There's no bulb, there's no mic. It's clearly my responsibility, really. And we've worked on a model to assign dedicated people, not project managers, although they are running contracts at the moment, but we want people who will be available daily to do the rounds and check Parliament, check union buildings, check all those areas where we are normally there, and actually ensure that we realize that charity begins at home. So it is our work.
the part of the department being irresponsible than ever.
Not the department being responsible, but being such an action. Is it sufficient or responsible?
Thank you. What I would thank you, honorable member, I will answer about long outstanding debt. On the part that I'm a chief auditor executive in the department, you see, when the financial statements are drawn, it could happen that the actual balance that show has been long outstanding. Maybe it could be coming from 2000. As the CFO has mentioned that we are not only working alone in the department, we have to engage justice. Until justice or the state attorneys have approved the write-off, it sits in our financial statement, even if we're the case of somebody who died long time ago, but he was owing the department a rental. We cannot remove that rental. It will be in the list of long outstanding until we have that written off. As the CFO has explained that when we bring these issues to state attorneys, sometimes they don't receive more priority than other things. It takes longer for them to work on these issues. But it doesn't mean we are not recovering, because we have seen, even if you can look at the balance of our debtors in financial year, you can see the reduction in the amount from one year to another of the debtors. It's not about people not being committed.
I'm not really
the answer, but
I'm trying to respond to you. Basically, the DGA indicated earlier on the overarching strategy around revenue collection, rental revenue collection in particular. But in response to the honorable member's question, some of these transactions have happened under the current arrangement. The current arrangement is that if a person is attached to a particular department, it is the responsibility of that department to ensure that it deducts government rental from the official concern. And this is where the problem with the current arrangement is that we will assign a particular portfolio to a particular department, particularly for those departments that carry out essential services functions, as well as for the political principles of those departments. So in instances, for example, where like the one that was cited here, it's really the department that where the person was attached that was supposed to do the deduction. All that we can do as a department, upon providing a house to the person, formal arrangements are entered into as a tenant, with the expectation that then the department concerned will do the that's what the DG says when he joined the department. This thing is not enough, because if we are responsible for this aspect, it may sound like abrogating our responsibility. Therefore, if we simply say this is the responsibility of the department.
Alright. However, let me assure you that our rentals as MPs are deducted every month without failure. So there is no MP who is behind with his or her rentals. Commissioner, can I give you a minute? We're rounding off.
As you know, I'm a new chairperson in this committee, so I'm actually even 3 months or so. So I'm still taking stock of issues. We have noted all the issues that need attention, which will engage with the department. And of course, by the time we reach the financial year end, by 2008, I hope there will be a mitigation action taken on these matters. So I will not say to you for now how we're going to deal with this matter, but I think we'll make recommendations to the department, of which we'll also give copy to Cooper in terms of what type of interaction we'll undertake as a committee. And we'll also update Cooper in terms of the responses we've received on those matters so that there's synchronization between our committee and SCOPA on the issues that have been raised by SCOPA. So I think there will be a necessary follow-up. I can't say much as a former member of SCOPA, except to say that what Ms. Madigiza has said, that why do you let the cat out when you actually dealt with the matter? It's one thing I will discuss with the DG when you look at it. But why do you embarrass me in front of my former colleagues? Thank you, Ms. Madigiza.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, DG, and your delegation. I think we've dealt with almost all the matters that needed to be addressed. I do believe that other matters that do require in-year follow-up, the portfolio committee will be able to interact with you, and I think you'll be able to continuously appraise them on progress that is being made. We thank you very much, and are hoping that we'll get the cat back in the bag. Thank you very much, the agent's office. Thank you very much, National Treasury. Can we have our customary 10 minutes before we depart? I'm not hearing you, Comrade Pierre. Were you fine? You were fine. Oh,
thank you, Chen. Thank you for the lunch.
Thank you.